ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for Fight Night Picks with your hosts, Frank
and Matt
Allen.
And a big thank you to everybody out there with Fight Night Picks. You folks chose the thumbnail for this weekend. You went Copacabana theme on it. You went Dude Love, Mick Foley would be proud. Holly Holm taking on Caitlin Vieira in that main event. Santiago Ponzinibbio and Michelle Pereira in that big time co-main event at 170 pounds. As always, one half of your hosting duo, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FNP. With me to my left, to your right, as always, Matt Allen FNP. And some people came out of the woodwork on the Instagram in the DMs for the Fight Night Picks. Last weekend was bad. The weekend before that, not great. But we trudge on forward with a fight card that I can get excited about. I mean, listen, there's not a ton of prospects on this card. There are a few big second times out. Obviously, you have Joseph Holmes, the ugly man, Joe. There's Jairton Almeida that a lot of people are excited about making the move up to heavyweight, a domain that he's relatively familiar with throughout his career. But I know a lot of people, if they didn't watch the Bellators, if they just sleep on those Bellator cards, maybe they didn't know Chitty Bang Bang, Joe Kawani. He's got a fight coming up against Dusko Todorovic. I am very, very excited about this card, Matt, and I'd love to get your take on it as a whole.
It is a fun card. It's not the longest fight card ever, which is kind of nice, because let's be honest, sometimes for these 15-fight cards, you almost need like a halftime in between. It would be nice if they gave you like 7 fights. You get like an hour to go take a nap. They didn't come back and watch the other 7.
Or if they just did what Fame MMA does and they put a smaller little cage in for the fights.
Just get weird for a little bit. Allow people to take that break and then come back. But no, there are quite a few fun fights on this card. I know I'm oddly excited for Eric Anders versus Jin Young Park. Not that that's a great fight that either guy's going to get in the top 15 off of, but honestly, their styles based off each other should result in a pretty fun fight. So I'm pretty excited for that one. And of course, the co-main event. Santiago Ponzinibbio was once a main event caliber fighter. Now, maybe not pay-per-view main event, but you get the idea. You are a big draw, or at least a decent drawer in the top 15 of your division, if you're able to main event a fight night show, and Santiago's been able to do that in the past, so this co-main event against Michelle Pereira, who is the definition of a wild man, should be a really fun fight too.
Should be a great one. We'll throw it on over to our fight of the night screen. Love to hear from you folks out there who you're going with in this screen. Last weekend, Caitlin Chookagian, Amanda Hibas putting it down. Davey Grant, where's the bonus Hunter Campbell, Dana White? What's going on?
He should roll up like Figueredo with a Versace bag, demand that the Dana White fills it with money.
I don't think Bishop Auckland has that kind of stuff. But we'll throw it on over to our Fight of the Night screen.
Let us know down below in the comment section who you've got. It's time for the Fight of the Night with Fight Night Picks.
Santiago Ponzinibbio and Michelle Pereira. I mean, what a fun fight. And for Ponzinibbio, longtime ATT guy. For Michelle Pereira, I know I'm going to talk about it a lot when we focus on this video individually. Working his boxing back home at Brazil, and that's all he's doing, and I love it. I think that's great for this matchup, and that adds an excitement factor between a couple of guys known for their striking abilities.
This is going to be an incredible fight. Like, I've been excited for this fight for multiple weeks now, just because Ponzinibbio, like I said earlier, was at one point seen as, hey, he could be a potential title challenger. I know, not really a hot take, but at the time I thought he was going to beat Usman when Usman ended up fighting Damian Maia. Like, that was the level of fighter Santiago Ponzinibbio was, and I know he was a fairly big underdog going into that fight, but that wasn't the hottest take going. I wasn't the only person who had that opinion. So Ponzinibbio took a little bit of time off with his injuries, has looked decent coming back, I'd say. He had that one little stumble against Li Jingliang. I thought he won the Jeff Neal fight, was a close fight, was a pretty good fight. But again, when you're having fights with the caliber of guys like Li Jingliang and Jeff Neal, it just speaks to what kind of a fighter Ponzinibbio is. And for Pereira, this is the type of fighter that will bring the fight out of him and will probably make him look really good and bring out the best version of himself. So I think this is the fight that's going to definitely steal the show.
Should be a fun one for sure. And I mean, when we move into our second pick, Matt, you're talking about one between Chitty Bang Bang and Joe Kawani and Dusko Todorovic, and I have, again, a lot to say about this fight when it comes time. But if you look at Dusko Todorovic, he's kind of like a stretched out but more tall than width-wise Dustin Poirier. And you look at Chitty and Joe Kawani, and maybe not to look at him, but this guy has the most sultry voice you've ever heard in all of MMA. And for Joe Kawani, you saw exactly what he can do. I mean, this guy, his stand-up skills are on another level. The level of Muay Thai that he has has, but also, when you're taking on a guy that's proven durable like Marc-André Barriot, you're going out there knocking him out in 16 seconds, you know that there's something special there. And Joe Kiani on a big-time three-fight win streak spanning three different years. And if you do look at it for Disco, a big first-round stoppage win to send Maki Pitolo packing to tough enough in his last time out. So I love this fight. Both guys stand-up artists. And Dusko's got a little bit of the wrestling in his back pocket, too, that you love to see. I think that could be an X factor, but I really do like this fight.
What I really like about this fight is the matchmaking that the UFC did. Because if we're being honest, Disco Todorovic isn't higher than Marc-André Barriot in the rankings. They're probably around the same spot. It's just a different look for Chidian Jokawani, who will probably be a top-tier fighter soon. And that's the thing. He has come over to the UFC a little bit later. He is 33 years old, so he does have to get working pretty quick. But I like just the different stylistic matchup that the UFC is giving him in this one. Like you said, Dusko is in there to bang, but he does have some wrestling that he can lean on if he has to, and this is probably the fight he would like to bring that out in, because like you said, Chidian Jokawani is on another planet when it comes to his striking skills, and I think this is going to be an incredible fight.
We'll see if Dusko goes all major laser on it, and if he leans on the wrestling. This wow. should be an amazing fight. I can't wait for it. Let us know. You have 11 choices. We've made two. There's nine remaining. So throw it at us, your fight of the night, down below in that comment section. Comes down to this fight night card. I'm going to punch it up. We're going to get excited. The picks last weekend, like I said, I'll admit it. Not very good. However, when we're going to focus on this one, we're going to pull some positives. We're going to talk about some negatives. We're going to inform you about the fights so that when you go to B-dub-dubs or a buddy's place and you're watching the fights together, you can say, well, geez, Craig Allen said, and it's going to be a wild, weird thing that you could use on a trivia night some night as well. But when you do look at this card overall, three ranked fighters, Ponzinibbio and the two fighters in the main event, Holly Holm coming off a year and 7 months of a layoff. And if you focus on it for Holly Holm, 12 fights in the UFC, former champion.
Only in big fights.
10 of those 12 fights were mains or co-main event slots. She's been on many a pay-per-view card in her overall UFC career. My favorite Holly Holm fight, when she fought Betch Kohea for that head kick. But overall, Matt, again, we've touched on some of these fighters. I mean, Parker Porter, Jonathan Almeida, that's a great one. Uros Medic, Joe Rogan's favorite fighter, for a hot second, taking on Omar Morales, a guy who sent Dunhyun Ma packing from the UFC. I mean, I could go all day on this one, and I will, but I know I'm looking forward to the card.
And Chase Hooper's making his return, and a lot of people are excited for that. He was a guy who was extremely hyped up upon entry to the UFC. I think we sort of found out his limits quite early on, but he is still very young in his career, and he's with a pretty interesting camp, especially for his style, because he is very much known for a grappler, and now he's with, what is it, Upstate Karate, New York, whatever it is. Wonderboy camp, Wonderboy Thompson's camp. So it should be really interesting to see what version of Chase Hooper we get this weekend, because how many times, it seems like every single year the UFC wants to promote a teenager, you know what I mean? There was the Mickey Galls, the Sage Northcutts, like there's always that one fighter who sort of stands out. Chase Hooper right now is their extremely young project, so it's always really interesting to see how they progress fight to fight.
Should be a fun card, and I think if Wonderboy was born and raised in New York, they probably would have poisoned him a little bit, so good for him in the Carolinas training with Chase Hooper. I think this is going to be a great fight card. Let's keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Couple of smaller strawweights coming up this weekend, looking to play shithead and turn and burn their cards, coming off their first respective UFC wins, number one. So for Sampage, Sam Hughes took her four attempts. She lost her first three in the UFC. Short notice call-up against Tisha Torres. And the Sam Hughes era in the promotion feels like it's been very, very fast. It feels like Hannah Cyphers. And poor Hannah, it didn't work out for her. But for Sam Hughes, a big dub the last time out over Estela Nunes. She drops the first round. She's just not really able to get into her own striking range and her rhythm. But once she was able to pick up her wrestling, it was pretty well game over. And I mean, listen, big time moves for Sam Hughes, especially that last time out. Fortis MMA is where she's aligned herself. There's plenty of good fighters to train with, moving to a bigger camp there. And I know I read somewhere in an interview that she did with All-Star MMA, but they transcribed it. So I read it, and Sam said she took all the money that she made from her last loss, that one being to Luana Pinheiro. That was on really short notice. Took that, moved down to the Dallas area, and got prepared prepared for her last camp. And I was very, very impressed that Sam Hughes, once she was able to implement that game plan, did look very good. And I wanted to give credit where credit's due, because we talk about Saif Saud all the time. He usually likes the tweets out there on Twitter. But between round two and round three in that fight that Sam Hughes had her last time out, this was a quotable. With your lead hand tracker and get that body lock on her and suck her ass out and take her fucking down and win this fight.
That's so aggressive.
Saif Saud really lays it out on the line.
Wow.
And for Sam Hughes, she was able to suck her ass out and take her the fuck down and get the win. So
that's a lot. That's a lot.
Good for Sam Hughes to get the win there in her last time out. But
Sam Hughes could be a freak.
What we do know about Sam Hughes is this, and I've touched on this just about every single fight. Wofford track and field.
I was going to say, can she run long distance though?
Cross country, and she has cardio for days. And the Sam Hughes fight that I always go back to, it's not even a UFC fight. It's actually a fight that she lost. It was the fight that she had against one Vanessa Demopoulos over with LFA, where Sam Hughes is putting in work for three rounds. And then in the fourth round, inverted triangle, that old, going back to it. That's Vanessa Demopoulos' like kryptonite X-factor move. It's like Jin Young Park on this card, how he does anaconda chokes like they're going out of style.
Okay, let's not act like Vanessa Demopoulos is some like world beater by any means.
But it was a title fight. But my point is, Sam Hughes for three rounds, incredible cardio, very good once it gets into round two, round three. She just has to really start to find her game. And against somebody like Elise Reed, that could be difficult.
It really does come down to rhythm for Sam Hughes, because like you said, she's someone who relies so much on her cardio, and I don't mean this to be rude, but that really is sort of her only skill that stands out amongst the rest. Like, I would say her wrestling is good, but it's still quite average amongst the division, and that's the problem. Her level of competition is high, especially early on when she fought Tisha Torres, but my issue with Sam Hughes is, it feels like anytime her opponent is like an 8.5 out of 10 or a 9 out of 10 in one skill, they can kind of just keep that fight to their one skill and keep on going back to it, because she's, like I said, a good wrestler, especially later, I would say, but early on in the fight, she does chase her takedown quite a bit. She's not the most comfortable striker on the feet, and I feel like that's me saying it very respectfully, because she does hold her hands very high up, but she doesn't have a very reactive guard. It's very stiff on the feet, and it's just her kind of reacting to the shots coming her way and trying to get it more into that clinch situation. Now, we had said before the camera went on that I'm kind of curious to see what these two look like when they face off, because in my mind's eye, I feel like Elise Reed will match up physically a lot better with Sam Hughes than maybe the Tapology page would suggest, because it does have Sam Hughes listed a couple of inches taller, and you know, with UFC heights and everything, you never really know unless they do face off. So I do feel like Reed physically can at least keep Sam Hughes off for a few of those takedown attempts early on, because on the feet, I don't think Hughes is going to have a lot of answers for the open striking of Elise Reed. And I do think Reed's footwork is at least good enough in the first 5 minutes to secure that first round with her own striking. After that first 5 minutes is over, though, that's when the fight really does get interesting, because if Hughes is able to start securing takedowns in that second round, then I do expect her to just go back, rinse and repeat over and over again, and just have a very grappling heavy 10 minutes being at round two and three. But if Elise Reed can defend some of those early takedowns, even in the second round, I think she can start to damage Sam Hughes enough, because we have seen Hughes hurt on the feet before, and again, I just don't enjoy her striking defense very much. I honestly think if she just went to like a high guard like Justin Gaethje, she would have more success than having that sort of like holding her hands outright, trying to react at the last second type of a style that she has.
When I went to do the tape study for this fight, Elise Reed moves great side to side. She can strike off the back foot. She's a third degree black belt in Taekwondo, owns the gym that she trains out of it in Kickside MMA. But I look at Sam Hughes and her footwork, and it's like somebody dancing to 100 gecks at the mall playing DDR, because she goes left or right, forwards or backwards, but she doesn't circle and she doesn't really move out of the way of much. So it is just one or the other, forward, backward. It just kind of goes that way. Again, I expect Sam Hughes to continue to progress at Fortis MMA. Still very young in her overall career. She only has 10 pro fights to her record. Same can be said for Elise Reed. But again, I think she's kind of setting the fact that she's a very good striker. She can strike with volume. If you want to consider, you know, Sam Hughes wrestling where it's at. And then Elise Reed, when she was 1-0 off a win over Orion Starr, you know the name, she did go out there and beat Jasmine Jazdevizius. Now, again, it's a very close fight. It was a split decision. It was a tale of Jasmine's wrestling, Elise's striking. Who did you think won? It was very close. But what I did like out of Reed was, after that, went out there, defended the belt. Then she continues to progress through her overall career. You look at it, wins over Jillian DeCourcy, who you see on Twitter all the time. Hillary Rose ends up in the UFC on short notice against Tajara Eubanks, loses that fight up a weight class in what wasn't a big surprise. And then Reed's last time out, I had the biggest like, huh? The judges are going with that. We're doing this. It's a split decision win for Elise Reed. You look at the judges' scorecards, and it is a little weird. So overall, 30-27 McKenna from Derek Cleary, but the other two judges, Anders Olsen and Clemens Werner, scored at 29-28 for Reed. I thought Reed won that fight. So it felt like a bit of a hometown cooking because it was over in London. Corey McKenna is from Wales.
If you were about to go off and say that Corey McKenna deserved the other scorecard, I was going to go off the rails.
No, but I'm glad. The weirdest part about it was McKenna going into the third round was a minus 285 on the live line, and 83% of the FNP fans had McKenna to win that fight. I did. I believe you did. Based on the takedowns on McKenna, but she wasn't able to get them going. Elise Reed was teeing off on the feet.
And that's what I keep on going back to. Is Sam Hughes that much better than Corey McKenna at any individual skill of MMA other than her cardio being better? And Corey McKenna doesn't even have bad cardio. Like, she can keep a fairly consistent pace for 15 minutes. And that's why I do favor Elise Reed. Not to cut you off, sorry, I did there. But for Sam Hughes, she does fight stylistically very similarly to Corey McKenna. And for McKenna, she's made some improvements with her game, but her overall goal is get the fight to the mat, get the fight to the mat. Elise Reed has now had, what, three camps of, hey, start defending takedowns, figure out how to strike off your back foot, and I do think that her natural striking base is at a much higher level than any one skill Sam Hughes brings into this fight.
It really is a tricky one. You look at the odds for this fight, Elise Reed open a minus 150, still roughly there, Sam Hughes around a plus 130. We have a look at the Tapology votes, not a surprise to us, but they will be to you. No, I'm just kidding, I have no idea what they are. I'm going to say over under 65% Reed.
Say under.
You're going to say under. It's way over, 320 votes, so a brief amount of votes. 88% Reed, 93% by decision for the 13% that have Hughes, 88% by decision. Matt, Elise Reed's had more than three camps to defend takedowns. She's had a whole amateur career in every other fight that she's had. It's been to defend takedowns because she is a striker at heart. Could Elise Reed, you know, struggle with some of these attempts from Sam Hughes? Sure, she could. I think Elise Reed keeps it standing, continues to strike away. Sam Hughes has improved with her hands as well. You got to consider this. This is a track and field athlete and a cross-country athlete that's parlayed in MMA. She had a pro debut in, what, 2019? Like, she's going to get better, and she has gotten better. Just signed a new deal as well, so I wanted to give props where...
Remember that time Sam Alvey signed a new deal, then lost his next fight and got cut? I'm sorry to be the Debbie Downer here.
When did Sam Alvey get cut?
Sam Alvey's no longer with the UFC.
Yes, he is.
After his last fight, he got cut.
Sam Hughes, not going to get the win here. I've got Elise Reed.
So do I. Again, Sam Hughes, she does fight in a similar manner to Corey McKenna. And the good thing that Sam Hughes has going for her is, like I said with Elise Reed's last camp, she's been defending a lot of takedowns recently with her last few opponents. Sam Hughes fighting Estela Nunes probably had a similar game plan to what she's going to be bringing into this fight. The difference is, Estela just physically doesn't really fit into this weight class, whereas I do think Elise Reed is going to be able to keep her off her a little bit more, use her footwork a little bit more effectively. And that's the thing, on the feet, I think Elise Reed can genuinely hurt Sam Hughes. I don't really know what Sam Hughes can do to Elise Reed on the mat, other than potentially get a submission later on, because she's not big into ground and pound, and that's the thing. It's like Bill Russell said about basketball. Basketball has and always will be about buckets. MMA is about damage. That's the most important thing, and that's what scoring is really based upon. Elise Reed, I think, can damage Sam Hughes more than Sam Hughes can damage Elise Reed.
Sam Hughes, second fight in a month. Elise Reed, second fight in 2 months. Both of us going with Kickside MMA's own, the really, really impressive Virginia Military Institute highest ranking female graduate. Wow. Elise Reed to get the win. There's your B-dub-dubs fact of the day. We got some big-time fights coming up in this card, including a bantamweight marquee matchup between the former champ Holly Holm and rising star Caitlin Vieira that you're not going to want to miss. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Fight Night Picks fans, Chase Hooper is not who we thought he was, but I will say this, for Felipe Klarich, he could walk into any bar in Rio and nobody would know who he is. And he's been in the UFC for 3 years and 3 months. And he's a former Jungle Fights champ. That is the lowdown on Felipe Klarich. He's 2-3 in his last five. I was impressed by some of his performances, but if you do look out at Fort Clarish, what does he struggle with? Well, he's an excellent Muay Thai striker. He strikes in volume and
fast hands.
Usually needs to get hit a couple times before he really gets into a fight, like Max Griffin. I like that about him. I like that about Felipe. And my favorite Clarish fight of late was that Luke Sanders fight. He gets blitzed in the first round, rallies in the second, rallies in the third. His last fight was a split decision, lost to Chris Gutierrez, but it's not a split. Like, Chris Gutierrez beat him pretty well the entire fight. If you look at the overall scores out of that one, they didn't make a whole lot of sense. But what I do have to say about this is where Clarish likes to strike, where he's a former Jungle Fights featherweight champ, and he did have his first fight in the UFC at featherweight against Geraldo de Freitas. Then he moved down to 135. He is going to be at a decided height and reach disadvantage in this one, so you will see that for sure. But when it comes to those takedowns, again, De Freitas went 6 of 9 on his attempts. Domingo Pilarte went 2 of 5 on his. Montel Jackson decided, let's try and set records. He went 11 of 15 on his attempts.
It was a clinic.
Judges scored that fight 30-26, 30-26, 30-25. And Luke Sanders went 2 of 5 and had the knockdown in the first round. But again, fast hands, porous takedown defense. Has a good first move off the first takedown, but once you rinse and repeat with them, you can continue to take Clarish down. Chase Hooper, on the other hand, training at Upstate Karate again. So this is another camp there with Wonder Boy. What's the secret of his powers? And I do look at this fight as Chase Hooper. Are his takedowns very orthodox? No, they're very unorthodox. He's going to go for a body lock, try and trip you, try and get you down in odd ways. His striking's progressed, but his striking defense, I haven't seen any big progression out of yet. But again, he's 22 years old. He's 10-2 with a draw. I hope to see a better, more refined version each time out.
This is what I really like about Chase Hooper being at the gym that he is at. Because I agree with you, his striking defense is not good whatsoever. But what I think the problem is with his striking defense, he has very slow feet. He doesn't move his feet very well. He's very flat-footed. This is a pretty good gym to help your footwork, or at least I believe so. If you're training with a guy like Wonder Boy every day and you're in the gym, learning how to be lighter on your feet, it will help Chase Hooper quite a bit because I think his lack of movement has really hurt him in a lot of fights. I know Alex Caceres was definitely a step too far for him at the time because Caceres is one of those guys who, will he ever get into the top 15? Maybe not, but he'll definitely offer a tough fight to anybody who's on the outskirts of the rankings. But Caceres was really able to not only out-grapple Chase Hooper, which was definitely surprising to see at the time, but with his own footwork, he was able to get in, hurt Hooper, and immediately get out of the pocket before Hooper could capitalize on really anything on the feet. So I do think that Hooper at this gym will have better footwork, and I do think it'll help him in this fight. The thing about Clarish, though, is if he starts hitting those leg kicks early on, that will limit the one skill that Hooper's probably worked on the most in this camp. So I do think that this is one of those clear strengths and weaknesses fights. If Hooper gets into the mat, I do think he's big enough, he's long enough. He sort of fights almost like in a Michael Chiesa type way, and I'll get to the Chiesa comp in just a second. That's the other thing about Chase Hooper. I never look at Chase Hooper and think, wow, he's going to have 10 more fights in the featherweight division. Like, he's going to move up to lightweight eventually. His frame will not allow him to cut this weight fight after fight after fight. And that's something that is always in the back of my mind. I do worry that one day Chase Hooper is just going to look terrible on the scales, or one day he misses by like 3.5 pounds. And we should all kind of see it coming, to be honest. He is 6'1". I'm sure his body doesn't love getting down to this weight class. And that is the other big key. Kolaris is a guy moving up in weight. You're right, has fought at featherweight before in the past, but Chase Hooper would have to cut off his left leg to ever make 135, so I do expect Hooper to have quite a big size advantage, and that might help him eat a shot or two on the feet if he does find himself in a tricky situation.
Yeah, this is, again, it really is a clash of styles. I mentioned for Kolaris that last fight against Chris Gutierrez, Judge Rick Winner scored it 29-28 Clarish. The other two judges, Michael Bell and Sal D'Amato, old Sal, scored at 30-27 Gutierrez. So a really, really tricky one from Tricky Rick. But you look at the losses, Montel Jackson takes him down quite a bit. Geraldo de Freitas, a split decision win for Clarish over Domingo Plarte. The other win over Lucky Luke Sanders?
Tennessee, I liked him way more than I should have.
Yeah, he had some interesting fights. But again, you do consider this fight as the clash for Chase Hooper in the UFC. A win over the other Tamor brother being Daniel. Where's David been? I don't know. The loss to Caceres, the win over Peter Barrett, the old Slippery Pete. He gets that heel hook win. He was all over it in that fight. And then his last fight against Steven Peterson, it feels like it was yesterday, but it was 10 months ago, almost 11 months ago. And in that fight, Steven Peterson 30-27'd him. He stayed in an open guard, kind of held him down, hit him. It was kind of like when CM Punk fought Michael Jackson. And Jackson just stayed there, held him down, clowned with his hands. Like, Peterson was kind of jawing at him a little bit. It wasn't a good fight for Hooper, and we mentioned it. He was training out of Upstate Karate a little bit for that last camp. He's doing that once more. So I do look at the odds for this fight. Klarish open minus 110, so pick him odds at the start. Minus 165 right now for Hooper, plus 135. We have a look at the Tapology vote. Surprise to us as they are to you. I'm going to say over-under with the more popular fighter. Going against the odds, I'm going to say over-under 70% Hooper.
I'll say under, but it'll be the favorite.
It's slightly under. 562 total votes, 64% for Hooper, 65% by submission for the 36% that have Klarish, 84% by decision. So, Matt, Chase Hooper, again, has the X factors that cause Klarish to kind of wilt a little bit in some of his fights. And Klarish also has the flip side of that. He can mix in. He mixes in a little bit of wrestling, but that could be to a detriment, especially against a bigger guy in Hooper. But he definitely has the speed and the striking advantage in this matchup out of Team Nogueira. And we saw a guy out of that camp debut a couple weeks ago in Clayton Rodriguez. I know he lost, but still that Nogueira connection.
So here's the question I have for you. In hockey, what's normally like the prime age for a player? When do they normally hit their prime and end their prime?
Well, you're Alex Ovechkin, it goes
just
forever.
No, what's in general, though?
Right now, it's really, really young. Like, entry-level deal. Like, you're talking guys that are 22 to 25 are hitting
okay,
primes.
And I love basketball. And in basketball, normally from, like, 22 to 28 when you're in your athletic prime, that's all you have. And then you rely on your skills sort of after that when your athletic peak starts to diminish. MMA's weird this way. You don't really hit your prime until you are 29, 30 years old because there's a lot of information to learn in this sport. And the more that we've covered this, that's sort of the more that I've figured out. There's so many weaknesses in MMA that people can take advantage of that that's really sort of how everybody gets into the top five. You just have to shore up enough holes in your game and have one strength good enough to sort of carry you to the top. For Chase Hooper being signed so young, it's a huge disservice to his career because I think it's setting him back multiple years. If Hooper was allowed to just develop on the regional scene, maybe he wouldn't have got this connection to upstate New York, so maybe stylistically he wouldn't be the same fighter.
Upstate Karate, it's upstate not New York.
Sorry, Upstate Karate, I don't know why that's such a metal block for me, but anyways, for Hooper, he may not have made this connection, he might not be at this gym, but you get the idea. He'd still be on the regional scene, and he'd have a much better record than the one that he does now. He'd probably be like 17-2, maybe 17-3, he might even have a title in like an LFA or some regional scene. You get the idea. He would be allowed to build on his base skills a lot more effectively and then work his way up to the UFC level from there. Right now, he's taking a lot of damage in a lot of his fights, though, and he is really young, and that's never really something you want to see. Like, you're right. Steven Peterson beat the brakes off him, and he did take quite a bit of damage in that fight. David Taymor's younger brother, who is not great, Daniel Taymor, was able to rock Chase Hooper at the start of their fight, and he hurt him bad in the early going of that fight. A lot of people remember how great the finish was, but you also have to remember how we got to that finish. Hooper got hurt, and again, the Alex Caceres fight, he got hurt a lot too, so I'm a little worried just about where Hooper is in his career for where he should be, because I think he should just be a regional guy right now. I do think his size is going to play a big factor in this fight because he is going to be much bigger, I expect. But I do think Felipe Claris, if he's able to keep Chase Hooper off of him, especially early on with some of those weird takedown attempts like you had mentioned, I think he should be able to beat him up on the feet.
And Claris, I do like the leg kicks out of him, so I am going with the former Jungle Fights fighter out of Rio who could walk into any bar and nobody would know who he is. Both of us going with Felipe Claris. If you love the submission abilities out of Chase Hooper, the promising, I guess, aspects of this big prospect, let us know down below in that comment section. But again, both of us with Brazil's Claris, a big-time fight coming up. In the main event, you have Ketlin Vieira taking on Holly Holm, possible next challenger between or after Peña Nunes. Ultimate Fighter 30, are you watching it? Either way, keep locked in with Fight Name Picks. We always say, let's get into it. This might be my favorite fight coming up this weekend between a couple of quiet combatants. We have, you can call me Dragon, Jonathan Martinez, taking on Vendetta Vince Morales. And I have to say this about both of these guys. We said this before, but I feel like I need to say it. Vince Morales coming into the UFC, I was not sold on him at all. Jonathan Martinez coming into the UFC, I also wasn't sold on him at all. And you have to think of this. He got brutalized by Andre Sukumtov in his UFC debut in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. So for Martinez, kind of like Mac DeMarco, he was picking up the pieces and he was out there. He started getting wins and I can focus on it. He's had fights in this promotion.
What does that have to do with Mac DeMarco? I'm so confused.
Solid days are coming. But for Jonathan Martinez, some fights at featherweight, some fights at bantamweight. Obviously against Frankie Saenz, he comes in for a bantamweight bout, just strutting his stuff at 140.5. And then he ends up getting the win in that one and brutalizes poor old Frankie. But for Martinez, he's definitely known for his striking abilities. We see that brutal left kick from that southpaw stance. And it's not like a Charles Jourdain where it's whipping it out there to the legs, to the body. It's much more to the body, not so much to the head. But Martinez has very, very slick boxing, a lot of power. Obviously, if somewhere down the road they decided, you know what, Jonathan Martinez, Davy Grant, we really need to see that. We really got to run that one out
there. I'd watch that rematch
for the
fans.
I'd be interested in the rematch as well because both guys stack up very, very well together. It's a younger version versus an older version, and Davy was able to finish him in that fight, which was very, very impressive. But if you focus on Martinez after that, he takes on the flame that burnout that was Ziad Lazishvili, sent him packing from the UFC, absolutely one-sided fight on short notice. Then he goes out there his last time and beats Alejandro Perez, a guy who will forever be underrated and sometimes forgotten. But in that fight, at the end of the first round, Martinez wins that first round handily. There's about 5 seconds left. Turbo goes for broke, throws an overhand right, and completely flatlines Martinez. And then I went, okay, well, is he going to struggle to the stool? Martinez just kind of clears the cobwebs, gets back up, goes to the stool. Most people scored that round a 10-9 for Martinez, even though Perez dropped him. And it's considered, well, of course it's considered a knockdown in that one. Martinez goes out there, has a good second round, has a good third round, wins that fight. But again, for Martinez, Factory X guy, made the move partway through his UFC run. The biggest question mark I have for this fight is, how does he look on the scales of bantamweight?
That really is the big question mark, because you know when he's fighting at featherweight, yes, he might be a little bit undersized, but at least you're getting the total Jonathan Martinez experience, you know? Like, you're paying for the extra suite, you're not just staying in the slums. And the good thing about Martinez is, he does have pretty good cardio at 145. He can take a shot, it seems a little bit better at 145. So I do think that the cardio does play a bit of a factor, the weight cut plays a bit of a factor. With his overall skill set, I do think when he fights at bantamweight, he must be focused a little bit more on just losing the pounds instead of working on his skill set, because even at 145, I feel like we do see a little bit more of a progression in his skill set than just him fighting at bantamweight, because it just feels like the same thing every time at bantamweight. Now, you guys know me. I think way too highly of Jonathan Martinez.
Are you the conductor of the train?
I'm still on this train. I don't know anything about cryptocurrency, but I know the market's not great right now. That's like me with Jonathan Martinez. I'm going to stay on this train until the wheels fall off, because the thing about him is, stylistically, and if you just look at his skills, he's an extremely skilled fighter. Like you said, I do like the comp between him and Davy Grant, because Martinez does have a very good grappling base to him. He has very good defensive submissions. He's not great with defending takedowns, and that really is the problem, and you do worry about him a little bit with his activity off the back, and trust me, we're going to talk about Luis Smolka in a second, because he's the connector with all of this. That is my problem with Jonathan Martinez. I think he is a good grappler, don't get me wrong, but I do think he's a guy who can get held down by superior wrestlers, and maybe in this fight it won't pay off for minutes and minutes at a time, but it is something you always have to worry about in the back pocket. But the thing about Martinez is, as long as he brings his hands back to his face after he throws them, I know that sounds like a very simple thing to do, but it's something a lot of fighters struggle with. That's really his big issue. When he throws his strikes, he's a little bit slow with his recoil and with his defense, and that's when guys can take advantage of it. With Vince Morales, I know people might be buying high on him right now because he was able to knock out Luis Smolka, but I don't really look at him as this thunderous power puncher. I think he has the faster hands in this matchup for sure, but I think he's finding himself in 50-50 exchanges with a guy like Jonathan Martinez. Martinez has multiple shots that can put down Morales, whereas unless Morales can maybe peek through the defense of Martinez, get one of those glancing shots on his chin, maybe he can drop him early, but I do like the overall skill set of Jonathan Martinez, but I've said that before, and I've been wrong before.
I mean, I look at this matchup, we talk about Jonathan Martinez making the move midway through the UFC career over to Factory X, the results have been 2-0 at featherweight, beats Thomas Almeida, beats Alejandro Perez, both those guys bantamweights. They moved up to featherweight for that fight. And Thomas Almeida, longtime bantamweight, but he's kind of carved it out at featherweight of late. And you do look at it, I mean, what's his record at bantamweight if he's so good? It's 4-3 in the UFC. Sukum Toth, being that debut, short notice, gets knocked down twice in that fight. The fight against Davy Grant, he gets knocked down, he gets dropped. And then it really is an odd bucket of muscles when you look at it for Jonathan Martinez. The other loss by split to Andre Yule, a very, very long-rangey striker in that division. For Vince Morales, why I said I couldn't get a great read, you figure in that Eamon Zahabi win, that was on enemy territory in Ottawa, close to home for Zahabi, but a loss to Domingo Plarte on Dana White's Contender Series, he beats Justin Hugo with Bellator shorts.
Then they did him no favors.
Then they match him up against Song Yadong, loses that fight, beats Eamon Zahabi, loses to Benito Lopez in the most what-the-hell judges decision I've ever seen. Because Vince Morales won that fight. Go back and watch it.
You're having close fights with Benito Lopez, though.
No, it wasn't close at all.
No. I'm just saying, if you're having those types of fights with Benito Lopez, like, Lopez was not a guy who stuck around the UFC for a long time and impressed many.
Lopez is a pretty good fighter. But, again, Morales won that fight. Loses to Chris Gutierrez due to the leg kicks. Beats Draco Rodriguez. Beats Luis Smolka. And the biggest point about this is, he moved his two camps to Syndicate, and then he moved to Syndicate, like moved to Vegas, I mean, before his last fight, and looked great against Smolka. And the most underrated part of Vince Morales' game, again, fights behind a double jab. He'll triple it up. He'll throw his right hand. He throws leg kicks of his own. The best part of his game is the part that you rarely ever see, and that's his wrestling. And he has it in droves. I know he wrestled in high school quite a bit. I know he moved all the way up through. But you consider the guy who's Vince Morales' cousin being Ricky Simone, and the fact that they've trained together for the longest time. Even though Vince is at Syndicate, Ricky's cornered him in the past, and so is Vince's girlfriend, who's also a pro MMA fighter. And you love to see that. So again, both these guys highly skilled, and they're both good at striking. They're both interesting at wrestling. They're both fun to grapple with, I guess. I don't know. I've never done it personally. But when I do look at the odds for this one, Martinez opened as a slight favorite, more of a favorite now, minus 150 to a minus 200. Morales came in, plus 130, plus 160. If we have a look at the topology votes, Matt, surprise us there to you, but I don't anticipate they'll be very close. I'm going to say over under 77.5% J-Mart.
I'll say over.
You're going to say over. It is over. 501 total votes, 86% Martinez, 88% by decision. For the 14% that have Morales, 47% by decision, 40% by knockout, because apparently, Matt, thunderous puncher Vince Morales knocks a lot of people out.
He does have good hand speed, don't get me wrong, but again, he doesn't really sit down much on his shots, so I do think he's going to have a hard time knocking out Jonathan Martinez, who isn't the most durable guy by any means, don't get me wrong, but I really do think the size advantage of Jonathan Martinez is going to help him a lot in this fight. Like you said, Martinez does kind of have two fights ahead of him this week. He has the fight with the scales, and then the fight against Morales afterwards, so I am a little bit worried about how he's going to look on Friday, but let's say he does look good, and luckily we do have a show 2 hours before the fight start on Saturday to recap in case anything did happen on the scales. I do think Martinez's size is going to help him. He can keep this fight at kicking range, which is going to nullify some of the boxing on Morales, and it's going to force him to shoot him for his takedowns at a much longer distance. And Martinez does have good uppercuts and good knees coming up the middle, so I do think he could take advantage of some of those openings from Morales, but I expect this to be a great fight.
This should be a really, really good one. And again, I talk about the fact that Vince Morales, underrated with his wrestling, we don't see it all that often, but when you talk about the striking accuracy, the long-range weapons out of a guy like Jonathan Martinez, I think he's still going to be able to get this one done, but I do see this one being very close, and if Vince Morales knocks out Jonathan Martinez, I don't see that as a surprise because of the weigh-ins and Jonathan Martinez at 135, a guy who used to fight at flyweight, struggles to make bantamweight, and he's still very young. So in this one, both of us going with Factory X, Muay Thai's own Jonathan Martinez to get the win, and this should be a very, very fun fight with a slew of them remaining. So make sure you keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. An absolute must-win fight coming up this weekend at lightweight. We have one of the worst nicknames in all of MMA. Omar, we know where you're from. You're the Venezuelan fighter. We get it, but you don't have to go by that moniker. But it is Omar Morales, and if you didn't know, he's the Venezuelan fighter. He's taking on the Doctor, which is a creepy nickname.
I kind of like it, though, because his last name is Medic, if you don't say it with the accent. So yeah, it does make sense.
Uroš Medic. But you look at this fight, Matt, and these two guys are very, very interesting. Because for Uroš, he started off his MMA career at middleweight. Then he had most of it at welterweight. Then he comes in on Contender Series and into the UFC at lightweight. He is a very, very big lightweight. And for Morales, he was a big lightweight, and then for some reason he moved down to featherweight with a mixed bag of success. After three fights down at 145, he's moving back up to a lightweight, and he's one of those guys that if you just look at the numbers on the page, he's 36 years old, but in terms of combat experience, not a lot from MMA, so not a ton of damage. He is a very defensively sound fighter for the most part, and when you consider it for Omar Morales, I mean, he has a great base in the martial arts. His dad founded a karate system called Slam! Da-da-da, da-da-da, everybody keep on. Slam! It's another one! Extra double dump! Do you think Omar Morales would ever walk out to that?
No, he doesn't have that kind of swagger.
Do you think he'd walk out to it if I sang it?
No.
No? Okay, so a couple double no's. Sometimes two negatives make a positive, though. We know that. But you look at it for Omar Morales in the UFC, you figure in that Dunhyun Ma win, the win over Gabriel Benitez, a loss to Giga Chikadze that was fun, a win over Shane Young where, hey, Omar, you're a wrestler? What is this? And then, of course, the loss in his last time out to JSP, Jonathan Pierce. Jonathan Pierce just piercing through the division of featherweight right now. But obviously not a good look for Omar, but for Uroš Medic, makes his UFC debut against Alon Cruz. He has that memorable post-fight interview where he thanks Joe Rogan for his performance, which was really weird.
Thank you for my performance.
And then his last time out, they go, okay, well, Uroš, you match up physically with Jalen Turner, here you go. And he didn't match up skill-wise, didn't even hold a candle next to him. It was bad.
It was a really tough fight, and that's the problem with both these fighters. The last version that we saw of both these guys are not very good, if we're being honest. And Uroš Medic is interesting, because offensively, he is phenomenal. He just leaves such big openings between all of his strikes. He's not like one of the... He's basically one of those Wing Chun dummies that spins around. Like, everything he does comes at a big, wide-looping angle. There's not a lot of straight shots up the middle, and that's fine when you're throwing everything into a big hook. If it lands, you're probably going to win by knockout. And if you look throughout his record, there's a lot of those on there. But the problem is, he leaves his other hand directly down by his hip when he does throw a lot of these strikes, almost anticipating the next strike to throw offensively. And I guess a guy like Omar Morales, it will be really interesting, because you have one guy who focuses almost 100% of his decisions on the feet are based around his own offense, whereas Omar Morales is a guy who works with a very high guard. He is good defensively with checking leg kicks. The weird X factor about this fight, though, is that since Omar Morales does have a very high guard, I wonder if those hooks to the body from Uroš Medic will be able to land, because those are one of his better strikes, and I do think that the high guard on Morales will make it a little bit more available for Medic to land as the fight goes on, but I do like the high guard abilities and the leg kicking abilities of Omar Morales in this fight. I just worry about his overall output in this fight, because Omar is someone who he'll blitz for about a minute and a half for a fight, and then he'll kind of Yoel Romero it, you know? He'll just focus on defense for a little bit, be sound, not really take any big risks, and then he'll kind of go for his moment again. I just worry that if he gets outpaced early in this fight, he's going to have to make up so much distance near the end of the second and the third round, but I really do think this should be a fun fight.
When you look at it for Uroš Medic, he did debuts at Alaska FC, Land of the Midnight Sun 3, the same card as one of the best names in MMA. Oh, you didn't see this, so get ready for it. The Diabolical Douglas McFresh. So shouts to Dougie McFresh, the best name in all of MMA. But again, the level of competition for Uroš with Alaska FC, not very good. And he was fighting a good style for Uroš, and really capitalizing on giant glaring weaknesses of his opponents. You talk about his takedowns, he's going out there blasting takedowns, just going all over the place for his finishing abilities, whether that be with ground and pound, like whatever Uroš wanted to do.
He just relies on his athleticism.
He could do, and again, middleweight, welterweight, lightweight. So he is going to be a bigger guy, and he's going to have that size advantage. You look at the guys that he trains with now that he's moved from Alaska down to Kings MMA the last few camps. I see a lot of Marvin Vettori in some of those pictures, and that is really, really nice to see. Again, I could pick a few more. Let's go Benil Dariush, Giga Chikadze, former common opponent of Omar Morales. So that has to be good that way. For Omar, training with a guy that I think is going to be a future champ with Bellator in Jason Jackson, but a lot of really good fighters there at Sanford MMA as I use my radio voice to announce Jason Jackson. But when you do look at it for Omar, you're right. I mean, again, nice high guard. Doesn't really fight like a traditional karate
Not
fighter. He fights more like a very, very classically trained kickboxer and maybe, to an extent, a Muay Thai guy, especially with a high guard. But nice kicks out of Morales. When he needs to use wrestling like we saw it against Shane Young, it's good. When he needed to use his defensive hips and wrestling against Jonathan Pierce, it's like, what? Who's this guy?
And that's what I keep on going back to. Like, the smart pick in every bone in my body is telling me to pick Omar Morales. But the issue is, His wrestling's good, but his top control isn't great, so I do think Oros Medic, just using some of those explosions, will be able to get back up to his feet. And I do think his overall size advantage, and again, Oros Medic is a really good athlete. Like, go back and look at some of the flying knees he's able to land on people. He's jumping from across the cage, Javi Ayala style. Like, it's impressive stuff for Oros Medic, but again, this safe pick is Omar Morales, because you at least know what you're going to get. He's very steady, you know what his strengths are, you know what his weaknesses are. I think there's a world, though, where Medic goes in there, knocks him out in like 11 seconds with a body shot, and people are right back on his hype train, even though it's probably unwarranted because, like you said, he fought a very, very low-level competition coming into the UFC. And I don't look at Medic as a guy like Chaos Williams as to where, hey, your skills are going to transfer, because I like what you said about Medic. He was just getting away with a lot of sort of rookie mistakes on the regional scene, and then all of a sudden you're fighting, you know, top-tier talent in the UFC. With Chaos Williams, it was still quite basic on the regional scene. It was all stuff that you figured, hey, he might be fighting better guys in the UFC, but like, good takedown defense and crippling power is never a bad thing to have. And with Medic, I just worry about how many weaknesses he has. I know I'm sitting on quite the fence right now, but this is a tough fight to predict.
Morales open to minus 150, somewhere around 155, 160. Medic open plus 130, somewhere around a plus 135, plus 140. If we have a look at the topology votes, they're going to be a surprise to us there to you. I'm going to say Joe Rogan's guy, the fans probably going with him. I'm going to say over under 65% Medic.
I'll say under.
So you're going to say under. It's slightly over. 545 total votes. 70% with Uroš Medic. 71% by knockout for the 30% that I'm Morales. 71% by decision. So is it Sanford MMA or Kings MMA, Matt Allen?
I would probably prefer to train at Kings MMA if you're asking me personally. I just think it'd be nice. I don't know. They've got really good fighters there. I like what you said, though, about the fact that Uroš Medic does seem to be featured heavily in Marvin Vettori's training footage. Because I think Marvin Vettori, I know he's huge, so of course the takedowns would be a lot easier for Marvin to get. But I do think him helping you on a daily basis would help you a lot getting ready for a guy like Omar Morales, who, again, keeps a very high guard, does like to push forward. The real difference is Vettori is just sort of like Omar Morales at the Hall of Fame level, if you will. Again, like I said, though, I think Omar Morales could win a 30-27 decision. I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever. But I think Oros Medic could go out there and get that crazy knockout in the first minute and a half that would not surprise me at all. I guess I'm going to pick the steadier pick, though, and say Omar Morales.
It is weird because Omar has fought southpaws in the past. You look at it, a win over Gabriel Benitez by decision, and then a decision loss to Gijikadze where he got dropped and totally outclassed. So again, that's what it is with the southpaws. He had the fight against Shane Young where he utilized the wrestling, was able to tee off when he got the opportunity, and loses to JSP, that fight back in September, on a pay-per-view card, UFC 266. So it is a really tricky one. I like Uroš Medic with the size. I like him with his long-range attacks. I don't like the fact that he is a long-rangey southpaw, which leaves that front leg to get chewed up by Morales, and I doubt that Uroš Medic has a great orthodox game if he's ever forced to switch stances. So I'll be interested to see that one. But I do like the length and the size of Medic and his own offensive wrestling to go out there and do some fun things. I mean, you go back to his fight against Alonzo Lisholm Jr. and he Granby rolls into a little bit of wildness. So I'm going to go for the wildness and the slight underdog here with Uroš Medic. Matt going with Venezuelan. It's like blonde fighter. Find
awful
a new nickname.
Nicknames.
Do it. But Matt
hire
going...
Hire us. We'll get you a better one.
Matt going with Omar Kickass Morales, and I'm going with Uroš. He's
I think the doctor's good.
He's more like the doctor's receptionist, Carol.
How
Carol,
you?
Carol. Going with Medic. Big time fights on this card. So let us know down below in the comment section who you have. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Coming up this weekend, a guy who calls himself Brazil's Khabib is going to be taking on a guy who fought John Jones in the past. It's Jailton Almeida, and if you're looking for fight tape, Jailton Almeida, Jailton Maladinho, or Jailton Jr. taking on Parker Porter. And for Parker Porter coming into the UFC, 10-5 the overall record. He was 35 when he made his debut, and I went, why? What are we doing here? And realistically, what ended up happening was lost the debut to Chris Daukaus in unimpressive fashion. And now he's won three fights in a row. And listen, Parker Porter is anything if he's a grinder. Because he can fight behind a jab, throws that overhand right. But what he does really well is he tires these guys out with his big body. It's like 2008 heavyweights. And if anybody ever wanted to make an MMA documentary on an obscure heavyweight, It would be Parker Porter. Like, there's 30 for 30s out there. They started off with the King's Ransom, Wayne Gretzky going from Edmonton to LA. There's other ones out there that people love.
The Fab Five's by far the best one.
The Fab Five is a good one. I'm thinking like 42 to 1, Buster Douglas versus Mike Tyson.
That was good.
Or even...
I like the Bo Jackson one, too.
Yeah, the Hungry. The one where they had Kobayashi and Joey Chestnut going at it. Somewhere in between all of that, Parker Porter deserves a spot. Because you can look at the losses. An early career loss to John Jones. He has lost to Gabriel Gonzaga, which was Gonzaga's pit stop between losing to Brendan Schaub and then coming back into the UFC. Parker Porter's had a weird, wild run, and I'm glad that we're here for it. But for Jaoton Almeida, listen, he weighed under the light heavyweight limit in his last fight when he took on Danilo Marquez, the biggest light heavyweight you're ever going to find. And he went out there and took him down with ease and beat him up. And this is the crazy part about it. He's fought at heavyweight in the past, a couple of wins there. He's fought at middleweight in the past. He's fought at light heavyweight. But he said coming into the UFC in an interview with Guillermo Cruz of MMA Fighting, he said that, listen, I'd be fine with fighting at heavyweight. This is like even before Dana White's Contender Series. He said, I'd like to fight at heavyweight because that's the division my friend Carlos Felipe, yikes, fights in. So
shout out to your boy.
Me and my buddy, we want to fight together, but it's not a team sport, boys, so it doesn't matter. But Jaoton Almeida, cool with it. He's just going to be taking on a mammoth of a man in Parker Porter this weekend.
You know those stories where it's like this blind person can make really nice art? Like, if you told someone who couldn't see what Parker Porter's name was, they would draw exactly what Parker Porter looks like. Like, there's no questions when you look at Parker Porter and when you know his fighting style. He is exactly what you think of when you think of an old-school heavyweight. But I feel like we do sort of have to give him credit for being much better than definitely I thought he was going to be when he came to the UFC. Because like you said, a 35-year-old at the heavyweight division, it's not unheard of by any means for a 35-year-old to get into the rankings. But normally they've been around for years at this point. They, you know, they're 7-2. They have a certain resume in the division and in the organization. But for Porter, he had some high-level opponents on the regional scene and then just ended up making it to the UFC. And his loss to Chris Daukaus was very bad. He looked a day late and a dollar short. He just was really slow in that fight, it seemed. And I thought that was going to be the story throughout his career. But he really does have exceptional cardio for this weight division. And that's the one thing he can always lean on. Is it always going to look pretty when he does it? Not at all. Because it is a lot of pushing forward. It is sort of that level down Marvin Vettori without the finesse. He's going to try to strike into the clinch. He's going to try to take you down. I just worry about all the in-betweens with Parker Porter. I think when he is going to try to move forward on Jaoton Almeida, because he's going to have to at a certain point. He's the much bigger guy, so you're going to want to make Almeida feel you physically and try to wear down on him. I just worry about his ability to eat some shots as he is advancing, because Almeida does have pretty big power on the feet for a guy who's known for his wrestling. I know he throws very wild and it's not all that technical, but I do think there's the opportunity for Porter as he's lunging forward to get hurt by a small shot. And if Almeida gets on top of him early on in this fight, oh my goodness, he is so much better stylistically at grappling, it's not even close.
Like, if you like Joanderson Brito, because he's a wild man, and yes, they both happen to be Brazilian, but they're both newcomers to the UFC, and they have really fun, electric style. You like Jaoton Almeida, but just like Joanderson Brito, huge liabilities in striking. Like, Jaoton Almeida...
When it looks good, it looks good.
Jaoton Almeida, you go through it, again, a lot of first-round finishes, outside of the UFC, wins over, who was it, Ildemar Alcantara, and then he also had a win, I want to make sure that I get it right, over Arnaldo Oliveira, but he had a win over Arnaldo de Oliveira as well, right after that. But a couple of guys that fought in the UFC, and I go through, like, that fight against Nasruddin Nasruddinov. Did Jaoton Almeida look great? Yeah, he did. Did he also get hit by a guy that's not really a striker, clean with a right hand through his hands that were like this? That was a striking defense? Yeah, that happened. I'm not just making that up. It really did happen. But again, I love what I see out of Almeida. He spears like Edge in the WWE. He wraps the legs like Khabib. And then he continues to just push and push and push and push. He doesn't make too many big glaring mistakes when he's on the ground. He just goes for it. So I do like it out of Almeida, what I have seen. But again, I do look at it for Parker Porter. Good opportunity. 3-fight win streak. This to me feels like when Anderson Silva got busy or tired of kind of toying with the middleweights. And he'd go up and fight James Irvin. Or Forrest Griffin or Stephen Bonner. It just so happened all those guys that he fought at light heavyweight popped for the banned substances after the fight. One of them was...
I don't think Forrest Griffin did he?
Yeah, Forrest Griffin did, Stephen Bonner did, and James Irvin had... what was it? What's the methadone in his system? Methadone.
That's not a performance enhancer, though, is it?
I would think that would be the opposite of it.
Yeah, exactly.
He tested positive for it.
The sleepiest man to ever be in the octagon.
That was what Wikipedia told me. But Matt, it is kind of odd that, like, I don't know what this does for a guy who's almost 31 years old. Now, again, This was originally supposed to be Maxim Grishin versus Jaltan Almeida at 205. About a month ago, on April 20th, the news was broke that it was going to be at heavyweight against Parker Porter. So enough time for both guys to get acclimatized and ready for this fight. I look at the odds. Parker Porter opened a plus 250 underdog, plus 464 average on best fight odds. Jaltan Almeida opened a minus 300, minus 685. They're cooked. And if we have a look at Tapology, goodness me, for the overall votes on this one, I doubt they're close. I'm going to say over under 90% Almeida.
Under.
Exactly 90%. 510 total votes, 29% by submission, 61% by knockout for Almeida. For the 10% that have Porter, 57% by decision, 29% by knockout. Matt, I think the odds are a little silly on Jaltan Almeida, but I'm not that surprised. I also have him to win in this fight. Parker Porter, for the internet sleuths that go on UFC stats and it has a big old goose egg 0% takedown defense for Parker Porter, you know why it's 0%? Because nobody's tried to take him down and he hasn't even had to defend one. So they put zero.
That's going to change.
They put zero instead of 100%. So that's why that's there. Don't come at us in the comments section throwing that out there. But I do like Almeida. Again, could Parker Porter outlast him in this fight? Finish him late? Possibly. But I do like Almeida.
I like Almeida, but I find it really hard to pick a guy who might be outweighed by 50 pounds in the heavyweight division. Because that's a real fact that we might be facing. Because I don't think Almeida cuts a tremendous amount of weight to make 205. He is very lean. I know he's muscled up, but again, he's not someone who you look at and you go, wow, he cuts an insane amount of weight or gets rid of a lot of extra. So I only expect him to weigh in around like the 218, maybe 220. He could come in light, heavier than that, and trust me, I would love that as someone who's about to pick him in this fight, but I do think that size is going to play a big factor in this fight. For Parker Porter, he might weigh in at 263. He doesn't weigh 263 the night of the fight. He is definitely someone who cuts to the weight division, and when you're heavyweight, they don't weigh in at exactly 265 because it's pretty easy to lose a couple pounds of sweat when you are that big. Derek Lewis has talked about this in the past. So I do think Porter, as a guy who does weigh in sort of above the heavyweight limit almost, he is going to have a lot of physical advantages in this fight, but I don't think he has a single technical advantage. I like his boxing more, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if it's something he can stick with for 15 minutes while he's defending takedowns and constantly thinking about the extras that Almeida brings to the cage. So I think the skills of Almeida should be able to carry him in this fight, but I do worry about the size. As a Porter,
look out for those sneaky front kicks all the way across the cage and the teeps from Jaltan Almeida. Both of us going with Brazil Zone to get the win here, but I'm staying away from this one, eating my pop and drinking my popcorn as the opposites attract. And I say it is a big time fight, so let us know down below in the comments section who you have, and keep it locked in because this is a big time card in the co-main event. Santiago Ponzinibbio, Michelle Pereira, and in the main event, Holly Holm, Ketlin Vieira. As we always say, Matt, with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it. Coming up this weekend at middleweight, this is the hardest fight to try and predict. And listen, the last couple of weeks, our crystal ball has been broken. I dropped it out in a parking lot, and it is just gone. So I'm going to try and hit you with the facts. We're going to spit some realness, as the kids would say, about Ugly Man Joe, Joseph Holmes, and North Macedonia and Italy's own Alan Amadovsky. And I have this to say. The picture on the right-hand side of the screen is Alan Amadovsky, when he's supposed to fight 3-2 Hu Yaozhang last year. Amadovsky had been off for a long time, looked bodied up. We said before the video started, he looked determined, Matt. He had a gleam in his eye. Were you impressed?
I really was. Well, okay, going into the performance, I was impressed. I was impressed by his stare down, his physique going into that fight, and I really thought we were going to get the best version of Alan Amadovsky.
So for Alan Amadovsky, he's kind of like a fidget spinner and Mason Ramsey. Hot in 2018. Where have they been since? I don't know.
That was tough.
That was really, really bad. But if
but you... see, I'm not yodeling out there in the street or in the aisles of Walmart.
That much is true. But what I do know about Amadovsky is he's no stranger to long layoffs and then winning very impressive fights. He beat Will Fleury, whose nickname is the F word.
So a guy was hyped up.
That was pretty good. Will Fleury's still doing it. But between 2015 and 2018, no fights for Alan Amadovsky. Gets a win over, a pro-debuting Badr Mahmoud over with Magnum FC4. So a big win there. Then he beats Will Fleury in the first round. Then he beats Ibrahim Mane in 12 seconds. And the UFC went a-ringing. I want this guy. We need this man. Let's go. Let's get ourselves an Amadovsky. So he goes out there and fights Christophe Jacquemont. I went back and watched that fight, and then I thought, okay, well, what were the scores in that one? 30-26, 30-26, 30-25, and in the last round for Amadovsky, he was outstruck 50-0.
It was awful.
50-0 and controlled for 3 minutes and 33 seconds by Christoph Jocko. So then what does Amadovsky do? Picks up the pieces and about 5 months later goes out and fights Captain John Phillips. What happens? John Phillips goes, well, that's cute. I'm going to knock you out in 14 seconds. John Phillips. Bad UFC career.
I don't mean to be disrespectful, but if you get knocked out by John Phillips, you shouldn't be in the UFC anymore.
So the UFC goes, okay, well, you're going to fight Bevon Lewis in 2020. And Alan Amadovsky goes, nope, I'm withdrawing. And then he's supposed to fight Hu Yaozhang a couple times, and he doesn't. And it just doesn't happen. So ultimately, that would have been his meal ticket. That would have been the, well, damn, we got to keep Alan Amadovsky around in the UFC a little bit more. Why? Why, Craig? Because Hu Yaozhang was 3-2. That's why. 3-2.
Not 3-2 in the UFC. 3-2 as a fighter.
3-2 at the time. So Alan Amadovsky had that golden opportunity. He could have had the golden ticket, but it didn't happen. Now he's going to be taking on ugly man Joseph Holmes, a guy who, listen, the positives are very positive. I look at Holmes as a guy similar to somebody that we saw in the co-main event last weekend at light heavyweight. Ryan Spann's bigger than any other light heavyweight you're ever going to see. Joseph Holmes, likewise, at middleweight. They both feature very, very good reaches, but they don't use them because Joseph Holmes, a lot of it's spent in boxing range and close proximity, up against the cage, so on and so forth. Two really long-rangey guys that also, for the pop that they have in their shots, have more wins by submission than they do anything else. That's kind of it for Holmes. But just like Ryan Spann, both guys lack in the wrestling department. They can get taken down. They can get outstruck. There's things that I like out of Holmes. There's things that I don't. Oddly enough, trains out of SFS MMA, has James Krause in his corner, Glory Fitness and MMA, or MMA and Fitness, regardless. But Matt, this is a weird, weird fight this weekend.
So you brought it up in the Uros Medic preview show that we just did not that long ago, where Uros was able to get away with some really big mistakes against a lower level of competition outside of the UFC. I look at Joseph Holmes in a very similar manner. If you do go back and look at a lot of the guys that we fought, yes, their records might look okay. Most of them do not whatsoever. But when you actually go back and watch the fights, a lot of the guys he's in the cage with are not high-level fighters whatsoever. And a lot of those guys do have glaring weaknesses in their games, no matter what their records might suggest. And that's the thing about Holmes. Going into his last fight, I didn't have the highest opinion of him. And then after it, I still have the exact same opinion. He has decent defensive submissions if he is placed in that position. I would say that's sort of the standout of his game. But like you said, for being as big as he is at this weight class, you would expect him to fight in a very different manner. We talk about this a lot with guys in the top 15. It's, hey, does their skill set have any synergy together? Do they have the wrestling that can get them to their jiu-jitsu? Do they have the takedown defense that can help them keep it standing? Not much that Joseph Holmes does really ties together to his next skill set. And that's really what I worry about him just being effective at the UFC level with. Because for Amadovsky, does he have a well-rounded skill set? No, not at all. He has big power on the feet. And I did expect him to sort of do to John Phillips what John Phillips did to him in that fight. So I was very surprised that Amadovsky went down so early in that matchup. And maybe I'm just so low on both of these guys that I can't offer a non-clouded opinion. I don't look at Amadovsky or Joseph Holmes as guys who are going to have 5-6 fights in the UFC. Like, this really is do or die for both these athletes.
So 6 inches of height and reach go to the favor of Joseph Holmes. He can get submissions. We've seen that in the past. We've seen Alan Amadovsky about 20 weeks ago on his Instagram train with Hamzat Chimaev at All-Stars. So who knows what that was about. But for Amadovsky, even in his win, again, 8 wins. All by knockout, most of them very quick, and he is more of a brawler. He goes in there in 50-50 exchanges, and usually he's not the nail, he's the hammer, so he's able to win. But against John Phillips, that wasn't so. That was the last time that we saw him. Matt, for Alan Amadovsky, the last fight was 2 years and 7 months ago. He debuted 3 years ago against Christoph Jocko in what was a bridge too far for Amadovsky. But again, I go through everything that I have. Both guys have poor cardio. They both don't have great cardio.
Right.
Joseph Holmes looked really good in his first round against Jamie Pickett. And then in the second round, it was diminished a little bit. In the third round, it was really diminished, and Pickett was able to take over. So I do have a really, really tricky time trying to give you, a prediction, because I see this as very 50-50, and neither guy's really impressed me in a while. And that, again, Joseph Holmes was able to get the win over Jonathan Pate, who was on Dana White's Contender Series at one point. Joseph Holmes himself was on Dana White's Contender Series, taking on a short notice Shante Barnes, and picked up a big win there. But I do have a very hard time on these guys. You look at the odds. Holmes open to minus 220 favorite, minus 195 right now. Framdowski open a plus 185, plus 160. So starting to close in. More than likely some uncertainty out there among the predicting folks. We have a look over on Topology. I would suspect the guy that's won a fight in the last 4 years is probably favored. Over under 70% Joseph Holmes?
I'll say under.
Wow. It's over 532 total votes, excuse me. 87% Holmes, 18% by decision, 17% by submission, 61% by knockout. For the 13% that have Amadovsky, 40% by decision, you silly, silly gooses, and 43% by knockout. It is a weird fight. Can the big guy get it done? I mean, 7-0 as an amateur is Joseph Holmes, 7-2 as a pro. And coming out of, and I want to make sure I get this right, to give them the credit they deserve, Salasang Fighting System. That's what SFS stands for.
I can't fault anybody for any pick in this fight, for being honest. Like, neither one of these guys the highest level of just MMA fighters in the middleweight division at the UFC. I do think Amadovsky does have a decided advantage on the feet. I do think his power shots are going to be much more damaging on Joseph Holmes. But I do think Holmes, and you're right, neither guy has good cardio. I'm going to ever so slightly favor the cardio of Joseph Holmes because I think he might be able to sustain his output overall if he doesn't fight with such a flurry in the early goings of this fight. And I do favor him a little bit with the grappling. I'm just so surprised to see there being such a decided favorite, being Holmes in the Topology votes, because to me, this is the definition of a 50-50 fight. Yes, Amadovsky's been off for a long time, but it's not like Holmes has made these massive improvements from fight to fight that we see. So I think there's a great chance for Amadovsky to win, and that's why I'm going to pick him.
Yeah, it really is a tricky one. And I mean, to me, Mane that Amadovsky had fought, not a bad fighter at that time, and now he's kind of set his career off on a different course. And Will Fleury as well, I consider him still in high enough regard, especially when you're considering fighters like Holmes, like Amadovsky. Those guys are in that periphery. And look at what you had Amadovsky going out there and doing so quickly. So it really is a tricky one. I haven't seen it of late. I do like Joseph Holmes' submission ability. If he can mix in a little bit of that wrestling, we'll see what James Krause has to say to him going into this one. But I think Joseph Holmes should be able to eke out that first UFC win. So both of us reluctantly, oddly, scarily going with the favorite in this fight, stop, Joseph Holmes. But I'm staying away from
Amadovsky.
You're going with Amadovsky?
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
How could you be confident in either one of them? How's that a holy smokes?
I'm not. So we're split on the pick. Matt's got Amadovsky. I've got Joseph Holmes. Let us know in the comments section who you have down below. And maybe you're a clairvoyant. You can see into the future. Maybe you can help us out a little bit. But the crystal ball here is broken. So big time fights left on this card. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. I feel like if you're going to be watching this fight coming up this weekend at middleweight between Eric Anders and the Iron Turtle, Jin Young Park, you could probably use a Miller High Life. You're probably going to be listening to Metallica. You're going to be jamming. You're going to be driving. This is one of the better fights that's on this card. And yes, for Anders and Park, have they reached high highs in their careers? Certainly they have. For Eric Anders, he main evented a fight night card against Lyoto Machida. So there is that.
And Thiago Santos.
It was a very close fight. Then he ended up with Thiago Santos in a fight that... That was a fight of the night, but he was the nail to the hammer that was, well, Maheta, Thiago Santos. But it is a very fun one because I look at this and Eric Anders, while he has those impressive names on his resume, Jin Young Park has a very convincing finish win over former two-time millionaire, Ray Cooper III, also a big-time fight early on in his career against Shavkat Rakhmonov that he did lose, but again, competition is what it was, and we're talking about that. Eric Anders has a win over Brendan Allen, so there's also that as well, but I look at this as Jin Young Park, very, very technical boxing. I know he did get kind of drawn into the wildness against Gregory Rodriguez his last time out. That was a fight of the night, which was kind of odd because in the first round, it was a lot of 50-50. It was actually more so Gregory Rodriguez piecing up Jin Young Park in the second round. First minute, Park goes off. Then it's 50-50. Then Rodriguez just absolutely goes wild. And he's able to get a standing TKO win. A good stoppage by the referee in that one, I gotta add to.
Rodriguez got big power in his hands, though. And that was the big difference in that fight. Rodriguez not only has power, he has the speed to go along with it, even though he is oddly old for his age. Whereas Jin Young Park, there is sort of a wind-up to a lot of his strikes, where it's almost like, okay, I'm sitting down on my power, then I'm going to throw it. And I do worry about him doing that a little bit in this matchup with a guy like Eric Anders, who is big for the weight class, but this is something I don't think he's ever gotten credit for. He moves pretty well on his feet for being the size that he is, and I always look at Eric Anders kind of like Chris Duarte, and this is the example. Chris Duarte this season had graduated college. He went for all 4 years, played basketball all 4 years, then got drafted. He was pretty good right away. But the problem is, when you draft a guy like that and he's good right away, he's probably not going to progress that much throughout his career. You're going to get a finished product right away. The Eric Anders that we got, who did fight Lyoto Machida early in his career, who had that crazy borderline soccer kick KO against Tim Williams, is large part the exact same Eric Anders that he is today. And that's sort of what I always worry about with Anders. He's a good grappler, but we never really see that side of him. He's someone who competes a lot in no-gi jiu-jitsu tournaments. That was really his claim to fame when he came to the UFC. But when was the last time you ever saw Eric Anders go out there and out-grapple somebody convincingly in a fight?
When he fought Darren Stewart.
When he fought Darren Stewart, who's not a high-level grappler himself, I always worry about Eric Anders when he fights someone who has any level of grappling in their back pocket, because a lot of his own takedowns come from his pure athleticism, not really from any style or any technique. And when he does fight those upper echelon grapplers, he can get held down on his own back. He's someone who does have a good burst back up to his feet, but if he does get exposed in some of those longer grappling situations, that's when we can see him get held down for long periods of time. And with someone like Park, who... is he a wrestler? Is he not a wrestler? Every now and then he can go out there and secure a takedown. I do worry about Anders' ability to get back up to his feet against a guy like Park later on in this fight. Early on, I think he is explosive enough and athletic enough to have that burst to get back up to his feet. I just worry about that defense and whether or not it's sustainable throughout a 15-minute fight.
Yeah, I think we've seen a progression out of Eric Anders since he's gone to fight ready. He's kind of cleaned things up on the feet. He definitely is a better striker than he used to be, but the tricky thing was his last fight against Andrea Muniz. Anders didn't look too bad for the first minute and a half. And then after that, he's standing not back to the cage, but around that black kind of line that's by the cage. Stands there with his hands right here, kind of leans ahead a little bit. And Andrea Muniz powers into a double leg, picks him up and throws him down. And then he ends up getting that wild armbar finish.
This is my problem, though. He looked good for 60 seconds in an MMA fight. Most fighters do look good in a 60-second period in MMA fights.
Not Alan Amadovsky is also on this career. It's just...
my whole point is, you can isolate a 60-second period in anyone's career, they'll probably look good.
Great fight against Darren Stewart. You talked about the fight against Tim Williams. I mean, poor Tim Williams.
That was disgusting.
Poor Tim Williams. And for Jun Young Park, again, he's come into the UFC, known as a boxer, double up, triple up on the jab. My favorite combination that I saw out of him, out of the deep dive of his tape, was against Marc-André Barrio, a fight in Busan, where he goes jab, right hand, right kick to the body, and it's just so fast when he throws it. And for me, Park, once he kind of gets nitty-gritty and into the pocket, then he can start to focus on some of those power shots like he did against Gregory Rodriguez, where he almost had him finished in that fight too. He really did have him wobbled. Gregory's hands came super low. Park was starting to tee off, and then he gets cracked, and then he kind of gets wobbled, and that's when Rodriguez is able to take over. It was a really, really odd one. It was a fun fight to watch, but you consider some of the losses. The debut to Anthony Hernandez in the debut for Park, beats Marc-André Barrio, beats John Phillips, beats Stefan Chukwue, and then loses to Gregory Rodriguez. Weirdest part about it is, you talked about the wrestling for Jun Young Park. It's hard to know. Is it great? Is it bad? Because in those three wins, it's all about his wrestling. And then in the losses, it's a little bit of a mixed bag out of both aspects of his game. So I do like what I've seen out of Jun Young Park in the UFC. Outside of the UFC, another win that's notable, one over Glenn Sparv. Out of Eric Anders about 8 weeks ago, training in Texas with John Donaher and Gordon Ryan. So that was fun to look at on the Instagrams. But again, fight ready, the gym. I'm sure Henry Cejudo's got his finger on the pulse over there with his weird pillows. And also, Yuri Prohashka, I'm sure, has been in and around the wrestling room and the striking department for Anders, who's getting ready for a big fight. Prohashka is against Glover Teixeira at UFC 275. So I look at the odds for this one. Open to par. Anders now the underdog at a plus 175. Jun Young Park coming in around a minus 220. We have a look at the Tapology vote. Surprise us there to you, and I'm actually really eager to see these ones because I'm kind of surprised the odds are as far apart as they are. I'm going to say over-under, though, 65% Jun Young Park.
Under.
I'm going to say under, slightly under. 545 total votes, 62% Park. What is that? 88% by decision for the 38% that have Anders. 69% by decision, 24% by knockout. Matt, what are you saying on the pick here?
I think Park's the steadier fighter in this fight. Anders will have these really high peaks and valleys with his output. He'll land a big shot, then he'll kind of wait. Then he'll land a big shot, then he'll kind of wait and stand out in the center of the octagon. I think Anders is going to be the one getting pressured a lot in this fight. And yes, he could sit down on left hand and drop Park, but I don't think that's going to happen. I just think the constant pressure and the threat of the takedown from Park is going to keep Anders sort of second-guessing himself on the back foot. And I think it will allow Park to start getting off with some of his volume. Again, I don't look at Park as being a top-tier striker by any means, but I do think the pressure along with the threat of the takedown, at least, is going to be enough to really open up some of the striking against Anders, who, again, doesn't really throw in combination. That's my big problem with Anders. He'll throw a nice isolated strike, then he'll kind of wait. Then he'll throw a nice strike, then he'll kind of wait a little bit. If he had a steadier output, I'd have a much easier time picking Eric Anders, but I do like Park in this fight.
Park throws in combination, and he's not a, you know, wild power puncher. He's a death by a thousand cuts type of guy when it comes to his striking. I like his leg kicks as well. You look at the two losses for Jun Young Park. His last time out, Gregory Rodriguez, he gets knocked out, and they have a knock him out, drag him out type of fight. Rodriguez takes him down a couple of times. And then in his fight against Anthony Hernandez, that's the story of the fight. He gets taken down six times and he gets finished. But the fights that he's won, he's utilized his wrestling. Eric Anders is a guy that usually if he has a wrestling advantage or a grappling advantage over somebody, he utilizes it very, very well. But when it comes to his stand-up, you're right. He does like to throw some single shots, reset, get back into that long southpaw rangy style that he has. And it's an odd one. It's got to be... The strikes come from awkward angles, too, so it's hard to see for a lot of guys.
The fight I always go back to with Eric Anders is the one against Elias Theodoro, because he complained and complained that he lost that fight, or that he won that fight. Sorry, he lost that fight if you judge it how you're supposed to score MMA fights. Like, he dropped Theodoro in a close round, which still only gives him a 10-9, and then he just sort of stood around for two rounds, and he'd land a shot here or there, but the output of Theodoro would just sort of overwhelm the small power shots here or there that Anders would get off. So, for Anders, it's been a problem for him throughout his career, and I did expect him to, I don't know, fix it a little bit at this stage, but I do worry about his lack of output in this fight.
Anders definitely the bigger fighter as well, so I can't wait to see these two guys weigh in on Friday, but going with Jun Young Park here as well, both in agreement with the South Korean fighter. You let us know down below in the comments section, can Eric Anders wrestle himself to a victory or land one of those big clubbing left hands? Or will it be Jun Young Park, a picture of consistency, able to go out there and get a big time win? I'm really eager to see this fight. It's one of my favorite on the card. And there are a few more fights left on this one that just, they get me ready. I'm waking up for a fight between Chidi and Jokowani and Dusko Todorovic. I'm excited about Santiago Ponzinibbio, who's taking on Michelle Pereira. And in the main event, Holly Holm, Caitlin Vieira, big time bantamweight implications. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. On the main card of a UFC fight night in 2022, Tabitha Ricci is 1-1 with the promotion. Pollyanna Viana is 3-3 with the promotion. And listen, somebody's 500 average has to go. And for Pollyanna Viana, two big wins in her last two fights, both of them by big time finish. One over Emily Spitfire Whitmire and one over Mallory Martin in a fight where Martin's gonna wrestle. Martin ends up in guard, and Pollyanna, in about, what, 3 minutes and some odd seconds, 3 minutes and 18 seconds
like
of action, goes for five submission attempts and then finishes her. And for Viana, the wildest part about my deep dive on her was I figured, okay, her Instagram is going to be a lot of training footage. It is not. She also has 627,000 Instagram followers.
Remember the time she beat up that guy who tried to mug her?
Yeah, but like,
I just remember, like, that was a very viral moment for a fighter that has not had very memorable reasons to be a fighter.
So, it is a little bit wild, and again, in this fight, she's going to have 4 inches of height and 6 inches of reach, but for Viana, the weirdest part about it is, I see that she trains out of Tata Fight Team, and there's an affiliation with Shoot the Box, so it seems to me, but Viana hasn't really kind of progressed with her striking. It really is reactive to what her opponent is doing, and the best part for Viana in a fight like this against Tabitha Ricci is, well, that's exactly what she's going to get. Ricci's going to march forward, lunge forward, throw blitzing shots with her head down, and try and get into a clinch to take her opponent down. And if you really liked Amanda Ribas last weekend against Caitlin Chookagian, you like Tabitha Ricci, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and black belt, judo black belt as well. She goes for a lot of odd takedowns. She's going to try and trip you. She's going to try and power you down to the mat. And once she gets you down, Tabitha Ricci, whether it's knee on belly, progressing from position to position, she is very sound. She goes for a lot of submissions herself. But the biggest thing for Tabitha Ricci is her striking is odd. It's odd.
It's not good.
It's not the best. She lost the Manafiato up a weight class on short notice. That's going to happen. I don't even look at that.
Still, the isolated skills don't look amazing.
But what I do look at is pre-UFC, the two fighters that she fought over with LFA. She fought Vanessa Marie Grimes, who was 1-5, and Tabitha Ricci was a minus 1,400 favorite. And then in her next fight, she fought Shauna Ormsby, and she was a minus 2,550 favorite. So beating fighters that you should beat. But when you're that big of a favorite and then you come into the UFC, it's like, okay, what are we going to get? Trains with a lot of great fighters in Southern California where she's based now, does Ricci. But again, blitzes a lot with her head down. Her last time out against Maria Oliveira, her striking did look like it has progressed. She wins the decision in that one. Wasn't really able to take down a Muay Thai fighter. And I'm like a Muay Thai fighter. Wasn't able to take her down, but had her thinking with the takedown attempts to where Oliveira was just super reactive. And I don't have the highest amount of stock of Maria Oliveira. She's the one that when she's fighting Marina Rodriguez,
I don't front one of these fighters.
She was getting struck and Oliveira walked away and went, nope, I'm done. So that was the end of that one. But Tabitha Ricci, big winner last time out. First win in the UFC. Pollyanna Viana, two fight win streak. Matt, what do you think of this fight?
These two fighters have a lot of weaknesses in their games. And it's not an issue. It's just at a certain point when they do get into the top 15, if they ever do, and I don't expect that to happen, it is going to be a very big problem. Like, if we get 15 minutes of striking between these two fighters, Dana White's going to be as red as, I don't know, any of these squares behind us, and he's going to be talking about how bad the fight was, and neither one of these fighters will be in the UFC. It will be that bad, because it will be Ricci, like you said, putting her head basically down to the ground like she's trying to do. Like, she's swimming, just looking from side to side, because...
Like a baby shark.
But you do really worry about that kind of a style when she is able to fight fighters who are more than just one note. And for Pollyanna Viana, you're right. She doesn't strike in a way, or really just fight in a way that's conductive to her own body style whatsoever. If she did sit down on some of her strikes, physically, she's huge for this weight class. She probably would have decent pop on the end of her shots. But it's all very slow, it's all very basic. She kind of looks stiff on the feet, and striking's probably the one area where she would be able to exploit Tabitha Ricci in this matchup. Now, on the mat, I know a lot of people are excited about Pollyanna Viana, and her jiu-jitsu is decent off her back. But I don't look at her as someone who's going to go out there and get a lot of sweeps off her back. She'll take advantage of some of the weaknesses that her opponents show her, but it's never her going from full guard to half guard to side control, then getting the back, and then doing like a Charles Oliveira threatening with a rear naked choke into an armbar. You don't look at the things Viana do, and you never think that it's really high level. And same thing with Ricci with her striking. It has improved maybe a little bit, but it's still extremely wild, and it's not consistent enough for her to go out there and win 15-minute fights just on her feet. So I think the grappling in this fight will be fun. It probably will be a lot of scrambles between these two fighters, which should it probably make for the best version entertainment-wise between these two. But it really does matter who's going to end up on top after a lot of those exchanges. Because if Ricci's the one in top position, she'll be able to progress past the guard of Viana, I do believe. Now, that is the big key to this fight. Viana is long, has very long legs, and she does utilize even her closed guard very well defensively. So if she's able to keep the fight in that position, maybe she'll create sort of a stalemate and the fight will get back up to the feet. But I do favor Ricci just because I think she's going to end up on top throughout a lot of these scrambles.
Just like Jake Hadley and Alan Nascimento last weekend. But again, when I do look at this one, you talk about it. Lots of, you know, positives that you can take out of their games, but a lot of negatives as well. It's almost like if you're a baseball team and you have somebody on the team like John McDonald or Steven Drew. Their defense is great. It's amazing. Defense can win games, especially at the hot corner.
Shout out to Kyle Higashioka.
Shortstop, second base. But then when that guy's batting like 150 and they're batting ninth in your order, it's time to cut loose and cut the dead weight. Like, there are positives and negatives. And with both of these two, there's some really big positives. Both are great at jiu-jitsu. Pollyanna Viana is a brown belt in jiu-jitsu. Tabitha Ricci is a black belt. But sometimes none of that matters. It's just the results you're getting inside of the cage. So, again, I have a hard time with this one, to be completely honest. You can watch all the tape you want, but it does get difficult at a point. Ricci opened a minus 200 favorite, minus 125 to 130 right now. You look at it for Viana, open a plus 170, plus 105. So again, those odds are closing into par. Viana has a decided advantage in terms of experience. She does have the win over Amanda Hibas on the regional scene, and also a big advantage in terms of her size. We have a look at the Tapology votes. Surprise to us, there to you. I'm still going to say over under 67.5% Ricci.
I'll say Ricci.
I'm going to say Ricci. Oh, no. 537 total votes, 61% Viana, 74% by decision for the 39% that have reached. He's 77% by decision. Matt, like, fellow Canadian Shania Twain in the 90s, that don't impress me much about the striking.
Neither one in of these this fight.
Pollyanna Viana, though, I will say, I do like her kicks up the middle. She goes to the body a lot with her kicks. Got her caught against Hannah Cyphers and then dropped. She got knocked down by Hannah Cyphers. Big right hand off of a body kick that she threw. But Matt, what do you say about this one?
You need range to throw kicks, and I don't think she's going to have range in this fight. The great thing about having a reach advantage is that if you know how to use it, it's a massive advantage. The problem is, if you don't know how to use your reach in an effective manner, if you don't know how to compensate for your long reach with elbows for fighters who get on the inside, then it's a detriment too, because again, you can't really get any distance and land anything of effect on a fighter who gets on the inside. I think Rishi's going to use a lot of forward movement in this fight, and I think it's going to really work out for her. I expect her to end up on top after a lot of the scrambles after the takedown attempts, and that's why I like Rishi in this fight, but I do have to say this, I am not very sold on either one of these fighters.
No, this is really, really tricky, and if you've got a good read on this, I'd love to hear from you down below in that comment section. I have Tabitha Ricci as well because I like the forward movement. I don't love the winging punches, but I do like the skill set that she does possess against somebody like Pollyanna Viana. We've even seen Viana submitted in the UFC against, when are we ever going to see her fight again? Full Reptile's own. We're talking about Veronica Macedo. But again, Tabitha Ricci, good opportunity here this weekend. In a battle of Brazil, somebody from Brazil is going to win this fight unless there's an eye poke or a lady cup check, or maybe a draw. So we'll see. Or no contest. There are a multitude of things that could happen, but we both have Baby Shark Tabitha Ricci to get the win. Big time fights left on this card. Chidi Njokuani, you've got Dusko Todorovic, you've got Santiago Ponzinibbio, you got me getting overly excited about his fight with Michelle Pereira, and in the main event, Holly Holm, and one tricky, tricky fighter in Catlin Vieira. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, we always say. Let's get into it. Coming up this weekend, a possible fight of the night at middleweight, we have the Thunder, Dusko Todorovic. And listen, he sent Maki Pitolo running off to the Tough Enough promotion. Yes, did they spell tough and with an N and then hyphen UFF with two Fs?
Maybe.
Yes, they do. Tough Enough. But he did send him away. Big time first round finish there. He's off the schneid. He was on a two-fight losing streak before that.
He's off the schneid could mean anything.
Very impressive with Dana White's Contender Series win over fellow Canadian Teddy Ash, unified champ, and a win over Daquan Townsend, where Dusko used a little-known skill of his. See, he is a former Serbian grappling champion, and in that fight against Daquan, he was able to get into a big-time top position, land a lot of ground and pound, able to get the win there. And that could definitely pay dividends in a fight like this against Chidi Njokuani, because for what we know out of Chidi, he's had big fights. Like, this is a guy that's been in multiple Bellator, whether it be co-main or main event slots. And I know he lost a former champion, Rafael Carvalho, but still, Chidi, for what it's worth, amazing hand speed, great power, and he's at a point in his career where, just like Billy Talent in the mid-2000s in Canada, guy's got nothing to lose.
You need to find a new reference.
When no one knows your name. No, he's got nothing to lose because he's 33, he's moving his way up the ladder in this division, almost like Alex Pereira is also doing, and it's a lot of fun to see a big-time win inside of 30 seconds over fellow Canadian Marc-André Barrio his last time out there. Matt, Chidi Njokuani, three-fight win streak, fighting more often, because that's been the biggest kind of criticism, is he doesn't fight very often. But I love to see this out of Chidi Njokuani.
This is a really fun fight, but I have one thing that I started to laugh about while you said it. Dusko Todorovic took down Daquan Townsend, so of course it's going to work against everybody. This is the problem with Dusko. He fights a lot like Alexa Kammer, and that's not really a name that I ever thought I'd bring up on this channel as like a comparison, but remember Alexa Kammer, former training partner, could still be a training partner of Stipe? Yeah. They fight in a very upright stance. They have very good boxing. They will go to the wrestling. But my problem with Dusko is he's someone who leaves himself wide open more often than not. And he hasn't shown off the highest level of durability in a lot of his fights. Dusko gets rocked like it's going out of style. And even against Daquan Townsend, he was the much smaller guy in that fight. That should be pointed out. But Daquan was able to move forward and have some success with his own striking in that matchup. The difference was the hand speed of Dusko was just on another planet in that matchup. When he was able to back Daquan up to the fence, it was kind of game over from that point on. I just don't think Dusko is going to be able to have that kind of advantage against a guy like Chidi Ojukwuanyi, who, like you mentioned, you're never really worried, especially in his UFC debut, were the lights going to be too bright for him? Were octagon jitters going to be an issue? No, not at all. He's been there. He's done that in Bellator. That's a fairly big organization. I know a lot of our viewers might not be, like, the biggest Bellator fans, but you have to understand, like, Chidi Ojukwuanyi was almost like an Anthony Smith-level fighter in Bellator. You know what I mean? Like, hey, we need a main event spot, and throw Chidi in there. It's going to be a good fight. He was sort of occupying that space for a really long time. And like you said, coming over to the UFC at this stage of his career, are we getting him maybe 2 years too late? Maybe a little bit. But if he is able to stay consistent and look as impressive as he was able to do in his last fight against Power Bar, who is a very good fighter in this division, might not be the flashiest fighter, but he's a very quality opponent and a very quality win at this division. I think Ojukwuanyi setting himself up for another big highlight win in this fight because Dusko might have some wrestling in his back pocket. I don't think he has the footwork to cut the cage off to then utilize his wrestling because I think he's really going to have to get the fight up against the cage to then take Chidi down.
Dusko Todorovic, again, if you look at it, let's stack these things up. Serbian grappling champ, Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, taekwondo black belt, and he learns... He fights like he learned how to fight on r/streetfights or r/fightporn. Like, he just likes watching guys fight in parking lots.
Big into bum fights.
And I better just get right into that. So I do have a tricky time. And again, he's kind of also like Johnny Cash in the Highwayman song. Because Kris Kristofferson, regular job, dies. Waylon Jennings, he was a dam builder, dies. Willie Nelson, regular job, dies. And then Johnny at the end of the song goes, I'll fly a starship.
Wrong song. That's Highwaymen by the Highwaymen.
They're all in that song, you dumb f***.
Hey.
They're all in that song. What are you talking about?
You just said it was a Johnny Cash song.
Like Johnny Cash and the Highwayman song.
Settle down, Craig.
I fly a starship.
You're redder than Dana White was when he announced Conor McGregor against Floyd Mayweather.
The reigning!
Yeah, take a breather.
Well, for the reigning defending Dusko Todorovic, as sidetracked as I've been, but as honest as I've tried to be, Dusko has all of the skills, but the trouble is he gets into 50-50 exchanges and his chin doesn't cash the checks that are being given to him.
Like, even in some of his wins, he gets rocked, and that's the concerning thing. You're always worried about Dusko taking a clean shot on the chin, and Chidi Ojukwuanyi is not the guy you want to play around with your durability. Again, Powerbar has a pretty good chin, has eaten big shots at the UFC level against good UFC fighters, and he was out of there in under a minute against Ojukwuanyi. Now, when Chidi does start to fight more upper echelon wrestlers, and it is sort of the key for him, he kind of got lucky getting that fight over as quick as he did against Power Bar. If that went into the second or the third round, that fight could have got more interesting for him, and that's the stylistic matchup that might give him trouble later on in his career. But against Dusko, who, like you said, he does have offensive wrestling in his back pocket, I just don't think he's going to have the footwork to cut off the cage to then use it. If he gets close, maybe he'll be able to go for a takedown here or there if he gets hurt, sort of panic wrestle. I just don't think he's going to be able to use his wrestling and lean on it throughout this whole entire fight.
Yeah, I'm really eager to see this one. And again, we have this as a possible fight of the night because it is just that. But you look at the odds. Ojukwuanyi open -125, favorite -190 right now. For Todorovic, open a +105. He's now at a +150, somewhere around there. We have a look at the Tapology vote. Surprise to us there to you. I'm going to say over under 75% in Ojukwuanyi.
I'll say over.
I would say over as well. 547 total votes, 90% in Ojukwuanyi, 88% by knockout for the 10% that have old Dusko, 32% by decision, 46% by knockout. I think Chidi Ojukwuanyi wins this fight. I would love to see Mr. Dusko Todorovic go out there and wrestle. I would love nothing more than that. I think it would flip the world on its axis, but I think Chidi's going to go out there and outstrike old Dusko.
I agree 100%.
All right, both of us going with Chidi Bang Bang. They should let Michael C. Williams just come out just for one fight.
It'd be good.
Just do that. He does light a fire for that, but both of us going with Ojukwuanyi to get the win. Can't wait to see Anthony Ojukwuanyi there, possibly. Former longtime UFC fighter, and it's a great one. There's two good fights left on this card. Ponzinibbio Pereira and, in the main event, Holly Holm taking on Ketlin Vieira. You're not going to want to miss this. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, we always say.
Let's get into it.
Coming up this weekend, we have one of our three ranked fighters on this card competing in a big-time co-main event, that being Santiago, the Argentine Dagger, Ponzinibbio, taking on Michel Demolador Pereira. And when you look at this fight, I mean, a couple of very dynamic strikers. Matt, I know you have a lot to say about Argentina's Santiago Ponzinibbio. There's so many X factors to his game that we could spend a couple of days just talking about that. But he's been in some massive fights. And not to say that Michel Pereira hasn't, but in a spot like this weekend, Ponzinibbio reaching outside of the rankings and Michel Pereira on a 4-fight win streak. If he gets a win this weekend, all of a sudden you're ranked and you're off to the races against some big-time names in a really stacked division. What do you make of that?
I think it's going to be a really tough fight ahead of him this weekend, because the thing about Michel Pereira is he is an incredible striker, but there's always a moment in every single fight where you start to get a little bit nervous no matter who it is. And I always go back to the Nico Price fight where he fought maybe not the perfect fight for the first 10 minutes, but you get the idea. He's hurting Price every time he gets close to him. He's on the back foot. He's moving around really well. But the problem is, with all that movement and with all those power shots, and when you're fighting a guy who's durable as all get out like Nico Price, near the end of that fight, we did see Michel start to slow down. And Price, it wasn't enough to get a 10-8 round, but he definitely did rally enough in third round to make the fight interesting when it did go to the scorecards. And for Pereira, that's the weird thing about him. I'm so excited for all of his fights, but I'm almost getting into that like Muslim Salikov area where in the back of my mind, there is that version of him who doesn't have that crazy output, who will stand in the mirror a little bit in some of his fights, and I think he will have a lot of trouble against Ponzinibbio if we do see that version of him this weekend, because let's say he does go into that third round mode like he did against Nico Price, or even against some moments against Andre Fialho where he lays some big shots and then he just sort of step off the gas and not really do anything. If you're getting into a fight like that against Ponzinibbio, who is known for his accuracy and for the ability, to throw in combination, that's going to be a really tough ask for Michel Pereira, who does rely a lot more on his one-strike capabilities than throwing in combo, because that's the thing I always go back to with Ponzinibbio. He's someone who loves to throw his right hand followed by the left hook. It's almost like a preset combination. Like, the second you see the right hand come, it's almost like a diversion for the left hook. For the left hook to really land after the fact. And if he's able to get his leg kicks going early, which is one of his best weapons, always go back to the Neil Magny fight. And yes, Neil Magny has not been able to learn how to check leg kicks in the past 38 UFC fights, but still, that was a main event slot. A lot of pressure on Ponzinibbio to look good in his home country. And he put on an absolutely amazing performance. His boxing looked really good. His leg kicks looked really good. And then he had his, like, Klay Thompson moment. He tore his Achilles and ACL. Now, those weren't the injuries Ponzinibbio had. He had MRSA. He had broken his hand. He had a lot of sort of separate injuries that were really bad, if we're being honest. And they did keep him out for a really long time. And he did look a step slow against Li Jingliang in that performance. But again, coming back with your first fight being against a guy like Li Jingliang, things are probably going to happen. And he did eat a big power shot early in that fight that did put him out. And that is something about Ponzinibbio. I do think he has a good chin, but I do worry about his striking defense. Lorenz Larkin back in the day was able to finish him. Li Jingliang was able to hurt him. Jeff Neal didn't finish him, but he definitely hurt him on a couple moments throughout that fight. Again, I like the chin out of Ponzinibbio, but he's almost too offensively oriented sometimes, where he'll chase his opponent around after he hurts them. And let's say this is one of those fights where he hurts Pereira with a big right hand and he finds himself chasing after him. That's when you step into like a flying knee that no one ever saw coming, because that's how wild the style of Demolidor is. Like, you can't just look at like Tapology and see, oh wow, flying knee finish. It doesn't do it justice. Like, the athleticism that this guy brings to the cage is very uncanny. And I can't say enough great things about this fight. You have a ranked fighter who there's some question marks about him ever since his layoff versus one of the more entertaining guys in the division. I think it's going to be phenomenal.
And for Ponzinibbio, a guy who spent quite a bit of time at American Top Team, you're going to have the camp there. For Michel Pereira, since he's moved camp to the United States from Brazil, he's implemented more wrestling in his game. So Zalim Imadaev is one of those fights where it was all Michel Pereira. We were sold a bill of goods on Zalim, and he did not deliver. He beats Chaos Williams, implements a little bit of the takedown, was able to get things done on the feet. The Nico Price fight, he fought well for 10 minutes, and then for the last 15 minutes, he was on the retreat. And against Andrea Fialho, he did have a takedown out there, but really did look crisp in that one. I was very interested by the fact that Michel Pereira is one of those guys that, I know we talked about this in his previous fights, where he's got videos on Instagram where he's like dancing on a treadmill getting ready, and it scares the bejesus out of me. And Paul Felder, I'm sure. But for Michel, all of his videos and all of his pictures in the last few months have been out of Academia Box Ulysses Pereira with Lucas Pontes, a boxer out of Brazil. And he is wearing the weird boxing cup that they wear in training. He's wearing the headgear. He's getting ready, and he's mixing in a lot of that pure boxing. And I think that's very interesting, because you already know how explosive he is. You already know how light he can be on his feet. I'm interested to see Michel Pereira, where you turn up the gas tank a little bit, you turn up the technique a little bit. Will we see him, A, maybe a little more hesitant, B, a little bit more refined, and C, maybe he can bring together another well-rounded game plan like he did against Andrea Fialho against Aponzinibbio, because I feel like that's what you need to beat Aponzinibbio.
You do, and that's why I honestly don't look at his boxing training as being a big advantage. Feel free to disagree with you. Feel free to disagree with me if you want to, but this is kind of the way I've looked at his boxing training. I don't care how long Michel Pereira boxes, he will not be as good naturally boxing as Santiago Aponzinibbio is in this fight. So I don't know if you making the fight more at his range is going to help you a lot. Yes, it might make him more comfortable in a couple situations, but I'm almost worried that he's going to put the fight in a position that might help Santiago, because Aponzinibbio can hurt him with the leg kicks at long range, hurt him with the body kicks at long range, and then that's going to force Michel to go on the inside. Well, if he's been boxing a lot on the inside, he's probably going to be willing to trade one or two more shots than he normally would with a guy like Aponzinibbio. And I would not want to get into a boxing match with Aponzinibbio, who, yes, he can get caught by a big shot here or there, but his hand speed's almost unparalleled at this division, and I really do think that's his big key to this fight. It's going to be his hand speed.
To me, it's almost, and I can liken it, you know, in my own situation in the past, you look at it for Pereira, almost like going to a batting cage and just continuing to hit balls and having a batting cage session. It's going to make you better with your timing, but it's going to help him defensively, having been put in some of those situations in training to have the muscle memory just constantly over and over again for the past couple of months.
But this is my point. I'd rather him just stay on the outside and stay on his bike than ever be on the inside.
I'm absolutely fine, and I hope to see some defensive improvements out of Michel Pereira. But again, we look at this fight and we have a look at the odds. A little bit of an inside baseball and breaking down the fourth wall. I write these odds. I don't look at them when I do my tape study. I write them down before each individual video so they don't creep in. I was very surprised that Aponzinibbio opened a favorite at a minus 150. He's now a minus 105 underdog. For Michel Pereira, open a plus 130. Minus 120 or thereabouts is the comeback. So the odds have flipped on this fight. Topology votes, I'm going to say over under 65% Aponzinibbio.
I'll say over. He's the bigger name.
Look at that. 571 total votes, 66% Pereira, 78% by decision for the 34% that have Aponzinibbio, 77% by decision. And Matt, I got to say, for Aponzinibbio, again, we saw him with that extended layoff off of the win over a tough Neil Magny. Then he loses to Li Jingliang by finish. He goes out and beats Miguel Baeza and looked very fresh in that fight. And then had a very close and competitive, I know it's a split decision loss to Jeff Neal. I thought Aponzinibbio won.
I was going to say, you guys don't hear me say this all the time, but I did think Aponzinibbio won that fight.
And I really liked his output. And again, I hate to use the word once more, so quick in two sentences, but the freshness out of him in that one.
And that's the thing that we sometimes talk about. You can look bad in some wins, and you can look good in some losses. The Aponzinibbio who fought Jeff Neal can definitely beat Michel Pereira. If he pushes forward, doesn't eat the big shots, and that's the key too. Jeff Neal's known for his accuracy, and Jeff Neal did look good in that fight. It wasn't the bad version of Jeff Neal who fought like Wonderboy Thompson. Jeff Neal's a much more accurate striker than Michel is, especially on the back foot. I think Aponzinibbio does throw in combination. Michel, he'll move side to side, but more in like an unorthodox manner. When he is being defensive, he will move straight back and do that weird move where he like bounces off the cage, you know what I mean? Aponzinibbio likes to throw in combination, and if you just move backwards, those combos are going to follow you, and one of those big shots will hit. I just think that Michel Pereira's good ranges are also at Aponzinibbio's good ranges, and unless Michel can knock him out early, I do like Aponzinibbio by decision, because I like his output. I like his cardio a lot, if we're being honest, because he's someone who can fight with a really high output and sustain it into the third round, so I like Aponzinibbio in this matchup. I'm a little worried about his chin at this stage of his career, because he has been in a few hard fights, and he is a little bit older at this stage of his career, but I think he's the much more skilled fighter in this one.
And Michel Pereira is really on the hot streak, not just due to the fact that he's on a 4-fight win streak, and they've all been entertaining, and you can gain something from each and every one of them.
Sure.
His last fight against Andrea Fialho, how good does Andrea look right now? I mean, it's like Bargnani in 2006. We're going Andrea, and I'm very excited about it. He's got a really tough fight coming up against Jake Matthews, but when I do look at it for Michel, you got to consider too, Andrea's coming in on short notice, and he is a pretty good boxer and has some of those qualities that Aponzinibbio has as well. So I do like Michel Pereira. I love the boxing training that he's done lately. I'm maybe looking too much into it, but I do like the movement out of Pereira. And the thing that I like the most, again, the controlled wildness when he's able to pop off one of those flying knees, one of those wild shots. And if he's able to go out there and stun Aponzinibbio, I think Pereira has a good opportunity to get a win as well. I can certainly see Aponzinibbio going out there, fighting one of those wily veteran type of fights where he goes out there and grinds out a decision win. But man, I do like Michelle Pereira here. But again, you can see positives and negatives for both guys.
It's going to be a phenomenal fight. Again, we don't put it on the fight of the night screen because we think it's going to be one-sided. I just look at Michelle's boxing training as being like when Jamal Hill told Paul Craig, hey, jiu-jitsu, you think you're pretty good at this? I've been working on a couple things in the gym too. I just don't think it's the range that he wants to fight this fight at. Maybe he will feel more comfortable there, but I do look at that as slightly more of a detriment than as a positive, because that's the range Ponzinibbio can get a lot of his work done at. But this is going to be a phenomenal fight because both guys are really durable, so I don't expect a fast knockout for either guy.
This should be a great fight. Be sure to let us know down below in the comments section who you have in a big time main event coming up with possible title implications after The Ultimate Fighter is concerned between Holly Holm and Ketlen Vieira. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it. And a big time main event coming up this weekend in our thumbnail. Of course, it's Holly Holm, the former bantamweight champ, taking on phenomenal Ketlen Vieira, who's looking to take another former bantamweight champ's name home to her bag of tricks as she's coming off a big-time main event in her first main event in the UFC against Misha Tate. She beat Cupcake by decision. It was a fight that happened, and that's about all I have to say about that one. She won some rounds. She lost some rounds. I scored a 48-47 for Vieira. And now she's parlaying that forward to a fight against Holly Holm, who's on a nice two-fight win streak, but we haven't seen her compete in about a year and 7 months since she beat Irina Aldana in a fight, Matt, that I have to be completely honest, I did not think Holly Holm was going to win that fight.
Not a lot of people did. Aldana was kind of the hotness in the division at the time, and for good reason. She had knocked out Ketlen Vieira with that beautiful left hook that everyone remembers, like flatlines or poster type stuff.
And then was supposed to get a title shot.
Exactly, but it never happened, and she ended up taking the fight with Holly Holm, because we talk about this all the time. It was sort of the position Rakic was in this past weekend. You can kind of get a title shot, right? But if you beat Jan Blachowicz, you're definitely going to get a title shot. Ketlen was sort of in that position, or sorry, Irina Aldana was sort of in that position when she had fought Ketlen Vieira, or after she had fought Ketlen Vieira. But Holly Holm put on one of those old-fashioned ass-kickings that you do appreciate out of a 40-year-old in this division, because for Holly Holm, you never really expect to see a big evolution out of her game. You know the boxing's in her back pocket, you know how good of a kickboxer she is. She has shown some good offensive grappling here or there. I always go back to the Megan Anderson fight, but that's the thing. If I have to talk about an opponent like Megan Anderson to boost up your grappling, it sort of tells you where that fighter is with their grappling. Yes, they can use it in some fights, but it's probably not how they get their bread buttered at the end of the day. I do really like the movement out of Holly Holm, and interesting fact about Holly Holm, her name got brought up so much the week that Amanda Serrano fought Katie Taylor, it wasn't even funny. Because, fun fact, Eddie Hearn wants Holly Holm to fight Katie Taylor. That would be awesome. That would be a really, really fun fight. Now, Katie Taylor beat her pillar to post. Holly Holm's a little bit older in her career, but still, it was cool to see Holly Holm get some kind of shine that week, because that week really was to promote a lot of kind of former women's boxers who hadn't gotten their shine. It was nice to see Holly Holm get a little bit of promotion outside of the UFC. That's just a sidebar. The thing about Holm is, and you bring up the time off, when is Father Time going to catch up to her? Because at 40 years old, a movement-based fighter who's not big on finishes, and this is my big point, the UFC loves to throw Holly Holm in main events. I kind of talk about Chidi Chokwani was the Anthony Smith of Bellator, like, hey, we don't know who to be in the main event. Holly Holm was like that for a really long time, too, to the point where she main evented a pay-per-view that not a title was competed for. Like, it was a made-up pay-per-view that sold buys. People paid money to watch Holly Holm versus Jermaine Durandamy. That fight wasn't very good. But that's the thing about Holm. People are going to talk about her for the Ronda Rousey head kick knockout and all these great kickboxing and boxing accolades that she has. Inside the UFC octagon, she's not the most exciting striker, for being honest. She's very defensively sound. She uses low output, I would say, but the threat of high power behind her output. And she does use a lot of clinch control, and that's going to be weird in this fight because Ketlen Vieira is probably the best grappler in this division, or at least as of late she's been able to show that off.
I don't understand why you continue to say that one wasn't for a title, because that was. That was for the featherweight title.
The interim featherweight title that got thrown together in the last minute. Yes, it was for a title, but that was such a strange...
That was the real McCoy. That was the real deal.
Craig, that was the fight that Chris Cyborg was supposed to have. It got thrown together at the last minute. UFC 208, I believe it was, sold like 100,000 buys. It was a very low-selling pay-per-view. My point is that Holly Holm for the longest time was the it girl for the UFC. Hey, we need a position to be filled. Let's fill it with Holly Holm. That was the point I was trying to make.
You know, you look at the winners on that card. Islam Makhachev, Bilal Muhammad, Dustin Poirier, Glover Teixeira.
If you're
going
to try to argue that was a great pay-per-view.
Anderson, it's just not as bad as people like to remember, just because of what the main event was. But again,
they all went to decision. There was like one finish on the whole card.
For Holly Holm, the trouble is, and I've got an article in front of me from MMA Fighting back in December of 2000. 2021. Holly Holm, super frustrated injuries are preventing her from pursuing potential fight against Juliana Pena. So again, that's after Pena won the belt. And you go through it, there was a hamstring injury where she was supposed to take a fight, then she was out, and then she ends up winning a fight after 3 months of a torn hamstring. So it's been wildness, knee injuries, this and that for Holly Holm. According to Holm, the issues with her knee aren't anything that will require surgery, but will still keep her from competing in October. It's not anything like ACL or anything really big. It's more minor scope, arthroscopic stuff. It's definitely not a huge recovery. So it is interesting because Holly Holm's been out for a very long time due to injuries, whereas Ketlin Vieira, the fresher fighter, you look at her last number of fights, the loss to Aldana where she got finished, she beats good old Sajara Eubanks, loses to Yana Kunitskaya in a weird fight, and then beats Misha Tater last time out by 3-2. So if we have a look at the odds for this fight between these two top fighters in this UFC bantamweight
division. Can I just say one thing? I felt like Ketlin Vieira did look pretty good against Misha Tate. Her striking seemed to take at least half a level up in that fight, because Vieira up until that point was a massive liability on the feet. She was someone who, if you look at her baseball war, it would be like all grappling, zero stand-up. It'd be all offense, zero defense. But I do feel like, at least against Misha Tate, she was able to damage her a little bit more on the feet, and that was never something I felt comfortable seeing out of Ketlin Vieira up until that point. The problem was, what version of Misha Tate did we see in that fight? Because Tate only had the one fight with her comeback, and then they immediately throw her into a main event against a genuinely top-ranked fighter in the division. So we still don't really know what version of Misha Tate we're getting at this point. Like, could you imagine if fighters in the lightweight division took years off and were still able to come back and compete against the top five, top six of the division? It would never happen. It's just kind of staggering that this division's kind of maintained the same, like, top five for this long.
Well, I mean, parlay that forward to this weekend. So your number two ranked Holly Holm is open a -210 favorite, -227 on best fight odds. Vieira open a +180, still roughly there, +190, somewhere around there. Threw it out to the vote over in the YouTube community tab. Bantamweight main event this weekend with a former champ meeting a rising contender. Who gets the win at UFC Vegas 55? And 74% of you picked the number two ranked Holly Holm to get the win over Ketlin Vieira. The comments over in the comments section, we've got Holly will powder around and outpoint Ketlin with strikes, defend takedowns, and win a decision. We've got Holm is 40 years old, but I don't think it will matter considering the fighting style she has. I see her winning a decision because this fight will most likely play out on the feet. And Holm is a better striker. I feel like Parker Porter is going to beat a gas Shelton Almeida because the MMA gods hate us. We've also got my money's on Ketlin. Holly is not only 40 years old, but more importantly, way too predictable. All she does is throw the 1-2 punch combo, rear leg kick, and my Holm. So listen, Matt, the fans are going with Holly Holm. The odds are on Holly Holm. She hasn't fought in about 2 years due to injuries. Will she win this weekend?
I'm sorry, UFC 208 was terrible. It was one of the worst pay-per-views of all time. I think Holly Holm stylistically can get it done this weekend. If she is able to fight like the fighter who looked good against Irene Aldana. The strange thing is, though, Aldana and Vieira seem like they are in the same position in this division. Even though Aldana does have such a resounding win over Vieira, and it was such an impactful one, too. It's just so strange with Vieira, because again, on the feet, I don't think she has an answer for any of the striking of Holly Holm, and not that Holm's going to knock her out or anything. Holm will probably, like that commenter has said, pitter-patter, use some of her kicks, stay on the back foot, but if Vieira does get her down to the mat, we've seen her submission ability throughout her entire career. Ever so slightly, I am going to favor Holly Holm in this matchup, just because I do think she's going to be able to keep the fight to the feet. She's had really good takedown defense, and if you go back through a lot of her career, yes, Misha Tate was able to get that, like, Hail Mary takedown and rear naked choke, but Holly Holm's footwork is good enough to defend most takedowns, and I think it'll be good enough for her to win at least three of the five rounds, hopefully, against Ketlin Vieira, and that's how I think the fight's probably going to go.
Yeah, it really is a tricky one. I ever so slightly have Holly Holm as well, but I don't have a ton of confidence in it, just due to the fact that the injuries and the layoffs for Holly Holm. You don't often see top fighters in a weight class miss about 2 years and then progress as they get to 40. Now, again, she trains with Arlene Blenko, a very, very good striker in her own right, but not really the greatest in terms of her takedown defense. Had a fun fight against Chris Cyborg not that long ago. Damon Blackshear as well, who is a very interesting prospect. If you've never seen him fight, go out there and watch some of his tape. He can kind of get it done in a lot of different aspects. I like Holm for the volume on the feet. We saw that for Misha Tate. Wasn't able to get her the winner last time out. But a much more dynamic striker is Holly Holm when compared to Tate. So both of us ever so slightly going with the US of A's Holly Holm to get the win in the long-awaited return, but let us know down below in the comment section who you have, because again, 74% of the fans early on going with Holm, but there's that little thing in the back of my head going, Ketlin Vieira's younger, she can mix in her takedowns, and we did see a bit of a striking progression from fight over fight in that last one where she took on Misha Tate, where she could certainly pull out a win. So you're going to want to check out ?Kicks, Matt. When does that happen?
2 hours before the fight start. Now, we thought it was 2 hours before the fight start last weekend.
They decided to have the latest fight night card
exactly.
ever.
Exactly. The fight started a little late. That's on us. Mistake won't happen again next week. But this should be a really fun fight. And there are a couple fights where, well, I'm kind of waiting until I see both of them on the scales to make that final pick. So QMK should be good. I'm always really excited for that show. So yeah, make sure you tune in 2 hours before the first prelim starts.
Should be a fun one. Let us know again in the comments section on the YouTubes, the Spotify's, the Apple Podcasts as well. Check out those shows. And it should be a big time fight week. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say,
let's get into it.